Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Debt deniers are dead wrong.
Heard a lot from the debt limit deniers. The Republican default deniers.
These Republicans are debt deniers.
One of the most outspoken debt ceiling deniers.
Debt ceiling deniers.
Now we have all these default deniers.
They are not among the deniers.
Default deniers.
These debt ceiling deniers.
We hear from the debt limit deniers.
The default deniers.
They're not listening to the debt limit and default deniers.
These deniers, east is west, north is south, black is white, and right.
Liars. Liars everywhere in the Imperial City. As our nation is drowning in debt fabricated by the century-old private central bank, the Federal Reserve, which is not federal and has no reserves, the political class threatens you with fear and deceit as they pile up debt unprecedented in human history. They call those who warn against it debt ceiling deniers. But they're not merely referring to the fiscally sane statesmen in Washington. They are maligning every American struggling in this anemic economy caused by reckless banks and government intervention. You are being deceived by corporatists and their propaganda arm, the so-called mainstream media and the statists in both parties. Yet there are Republicans who are actually conservative. And remember, a conservative is two-thirds a libertarian, as in classical liberal. Although they represent the majority of Americans, they are the minority in the rhino-run GOP, a dead Republican Party that uses the imagery of Reagan, Ron Paul, and Newt Gingrich, while the defeatist rhinos call for surrender before the fight has begun. As the Tea Party and Liberty Movement congressmen and senators fight for the Constitution, fiscal sanity, and the majority of Americans trying to resuscitate a GOP that has been dead since August of 2012. The rhinos spend more time, energy, and vigor trying to derail conservatives in their own party rather than turning their sights on the enfeebled Democrats and the unpopular White House. The White House, Democrats, and squishy rhinos are railing and maneuvering against the so-called debt ceiling deniers as they seek to dramatically increase the public debt, ostensibly to avoid defaulting on the U.S. government's obligations. This is merely a rhetorical trick to get you to believe that the current shutdown showdown over short-term continuing resolutions to fund appropriations is somehow linked to raising the debt ceiling or defaulting on interest payments. Why? In order to frighten you into giving up the grassroots pressure you are placing on Congress to follow the Constitution, fund the federal government, delay Obamacare, and cut spending, or at least not increase it. Yet there are conservative liberty representatives in both chambers who need your continued and increased help in standing up for the rule of law and turning the runaway government back toward the constitutional republic and fiscal sanity. The fact is, the tax receipts are more than enough to cover the interest on the debt, avoiding default, and also cover Social Security, Medicare, and defense. Nevertheless, if the Yellen Fed keeps devaluing the currency, coupled with the added regulatory tax and economic burden of Obamacare, then default is inevitable. Send a grassroots tsunami and force the squishy rhinos to stand with the real conservatives and defenders of liberty to delay Obamacare, cut spending, avoid default, and don't fall for the fear-mongering that the debt ceiling has anything to do with ending the shutdown. Conservatives won in 1995 and 96 because Newt didn't flinch, and Clinton, who's smarter and more competent than Obama, was brought to the negotiating table and the leftist ratchet of government was moved back toward the right. Now is not the time to flinch or blink. Now is the time to strike a victory for liberty. If you love liberty and the Constitution that protects it, whether you are independent, Republican, Occupy, Tea Party, conservative, libertarian, or whatever the hell you want to call yourself, send a grassroots tsunami to the Imperial City and demand limited government. This is not a partisan or ideological issue. It is not about health care or insurance reform or reopening the 17% of government that's temporarily closed. It's not about defaulting on the fabricated debt. This is a matter of survival. Are we turning back toward the republic or continuing the engineered decline and acceleration down the road to serfdom in a police state at home and empire abroad? Liberty is yours to lose. Will you fight? Will you defend the Constitution and stand with those who are? Send a tsunami. Don't let the squishes cave. Don't let the Democrats and Obama hold you hostage on behalf of the bankers. We don't need to raise the debt ceiling to end the shutdown, pay our bills, and delay Obamacare. Keep the pressure on the Republicans, good and bad alike, and prevent Obama from using fear of default and a continuance of a minor government shutdown to increase the power of the imperial presidency. You're live with Rex and Tex, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from Debt Central, otherwise known as Washington, D.C.
And this is Tex, broadcasting from deep in the heart of Texas. Pretty much laid the scene there. So we've had the government shutdown for several days, and the Republican leadership, which was never down with this, they want to give up as quickly as they can because they managed to conflate the expansion of the government's ability to borrow money with continued funding of government operations, which is the exact reason that you would need to increase the borrowing capacity in the first place, is because your organization is too expensive and there's not enough money in the world to run the damn thing. So you have to keep printing money in order to keep it going. So instead of actually balancing the budget or shutting down 17% of its operations, as anybody would do if they had an organization that was spending itself into oblivion, shut down part of the operation, what they've decided to do is conflate the fact that government needs to continue borrowing money from now until eternity with the fact that its operations are shut down. So in the minds of many Americans, the two issues are confused right now. But never fear, I would say, look, kick the can down the road on the debt spending increase 6 weeks, and then leave the government shut down. Because it's not shut down. It's only 83% shut down, 17% shut down. If it's 17% shut down, you should probably save about 17% of the expenses of the thing, right? Great. Perfect. Leave it
not
like
in Washington, D.C. math.
Yeah, well, they're spending extra money to make it look shut down, which means they must have extra money lying around, right? They have money to go close the World War II memorial. You know, you've been to the World War II memorial, and they're like, oh, yeah, but don't they have to pay park rangers to be there to guard the thing? Yeah, not really. I mean, there was a Chinese lady throwing blue paint on the Lincoln Memorial several weeks ago. Where's the park ranger then, right? But now you actually are paying park rangers to stand there and man barricades. What is the point of that? So you increase expenditure, which just should go to prove that the government actually does have all the money that it needs to run its operations and even the stuff they're saying you shut down. How much money do you think it costs to put those barricades up and have a bunch of people man it and a bunch of people tell them if you walk over here, you're going to get arrested? It's more expensive to shut it down than it is to run it. And that, my friends, according to Washington, D.C., that's good government. It's more expensive when we're not doing anything.
Yeah, well.
It's like you're working with the mafia. Oh, yeah, you want us to stop working. That's going to cost you a lot of money.
Yeah.
So
it's an outdoor monument. It's an outdoor monument. It's just open. I mean, yeah, you got some maintenance costs, but other than that, what does it cost to run it? Plus, it's mostly private funded anyway. And they're doing it with parks. They're doing it. I mean, look, some of the governors like Jan Brewer and a couple of, like North Dakota, California, I think Utah, the states are reopening the national parks. It makes you wonder, why the hell are these parks national in the first place? Shouldn't they be state parks to begin with? I mean, should there be a national park outside of the District of Columbia? It doesn't make any sense. This is government at its worst, and you're allowing it to happen.
No, that's exactly what I was saying several weeks ago. Is look, these things are within the jurisdiction of states. State governments could easily pay for these things. If they're as big a tourist attraction as everyone claims and they make as much money as they claim, then the state should take this stuff over, and the state should go demand it. You know, get a whole bunch of states and like, look, I want to own Yellowstone. You want to own Yosemite. You want to own God only knows whatever state park is in your or national park is in your area. Boom, let's just turn it over to all the states and get all the senators to vote, and we just turn things over. And then now every time the government shuts down, they can't use that.
Yep. But first you have to reappropriate the funds, which means that instead of sending the money to D.C., having them squander it and then return it to the states with strings attached, the states have to retain their taxing power and then forward the money to Washington. That's going to require a massive reform of the IRS and the Fed and all that crap. Tex, you're absolutely right.
It's insane. IRS is part of the problem.
Yes, I'm good with that. But, you know, it's insane that you're right. The imperial presidency is using this shutdown. And in a sense, you know, the shutdown, which was forced on the Republicans by Harry Reid, actually empowers Obama because he has discretion over the shutdown spending and the order of the shutdown, making essential employees non-essential and non-essential essential and what have you, makes you wonder, if 25% of your workforce is non-essential, shouldn't they just not be working for you? I mean, if you're running a business, would you keep 25% of your payroll as non-essential employees? That's the insanity of Washington. But to use the parks, the monuments, and especially to keep World War II veterans out of the memorial that honors their sacrifice, and to also deny death benefits to servicemen and women killed in action because you forced them to go overseas to fight someone else's war, which wasn't necessary. And Obama had the power to not have that happen, and both houses of both chambers of Congress passed a law that fully funded the military, and they came up with some vague, oh, we didn't understand the law, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just all bullshit, and it's the kind of thing that's backfiring on these Democrats. The longer this shutdown goes on, the worse it gets for them. But interestingly, Sarah Palin was here for the Vet March, which happened, I believe, yesterday and today in Washington, where the vets were basically removing the barricades and going into their monument. And I got about a minute and 10 seconds here with Sarah Palin, interviewed by Greta Van Susteren, with a couple of pretty cool guests. Here's a minute, and then we'll see if we can bring Trog in on the other side.
Greta Van Susteren was at today's Million Vet March and sat down with former Governor Sarah Palin and Senators Mike Lee and Ted Cruz, who were all in attendance.
Why are you here down on the memorial this morning?
I'm here to hopefully help show the veterans that America's heart for our veterans is immeasurable, and we think it's atrocious that our military is being used as political pawns in a political game, and we're going to change that. And we appreciate these guys who are the good guys in the Senate picking up the fight for us. But there are a few things that we can do to show our support, and that's why I'm here. Senator Lee?
This belongs to the people, and we're here to show our solidarity with them. And that this is not a tool to be used against them in a political fight. This is theirs.
Senator Cruz?
Our veterans should be above politics. It is shameful that the administration is barricading and trying to shut down the memorials. Weeks ago, the House of Representatives passed funding to open every memorial in this country, and President Obama and the Democrats are blocking it. They're trying to play games, and the American people know they're trying to play games. They need to come together and fix this problem and stop holding our veterans hostage.
There you go. Do you think that they're holding the veterans hostage?
pretty much when it comes to the memorials, it's retarded. The whole thing is, like, when I worked in D.C., as my boss said, if they ever try to cut your budget, just tell them the Washington Monument will fall down if they cut your budget by even a dollar, right? And so that's what they're doing. They're running around. They're trying to find things that make people think they need federal government spending. And this is what they've come up with. Like, oh, we won't let them visit the national monuments, the national parks. And this will create such a groundswell of pressure and pain that the American people will call their congressmen and demand that they reopen the government and fund it as it's never been funded before so that people can keep walking down sidewalks and go to open-air memorials. Really, this is as clever as Washington gets. I mean, this is some real geniuses here. I don't know. You know, you got to go to a really expensive school to think of this stuff. I mean, the rest of us, we can't wrap our heads around
Harvard.
This crap.
You have to go to Harvard.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the whole thing's blown up in their face because they're trying to find things that people actually need, government for, the federal government for. So you have, one issue that I think is actually important is you have soldiers overseas, some of whom are killed in action. In godforsaken places like Afghanistan, which, once again, what the hell are we doing in Afghanistan? Let's get out of here. It's completely pointless. These people
we're
never leave the country. Yeah, exactly.
Don't we have to kill Bin Laden again? We've only killed him three times. We've got to kill him again.
We're going to stab him until he's atoms. But, you know, so you have these people, they die, and they're supposed to get death benefits, right? And that's something that we as a government have agreed. And so now they're stating that, oh, we can't pay that because of the government shutdown. And they got a whole bunch of lawyers that are supposedly trying to interpret the law in order to understand whether or not they can actually pay this stuff. Look, I don't know. There's good people in government, and there's shady characters, right? Okay, so I assume the good people in government are trying to say, look, it's pretty clear that you can actually pay this stuff. And there are other people in there saying, oh, no, but it's not clear. It's so confused. I don't know. And they're trying to conflate this whole thing. But look, it's an obligation that we've taken on, and yes, you go pay the death benefits because, among other things, it's the right thing to do, and I don't think anybody's going to go after the head of, I cannot believe when the government was shut down, you paid the death benefit to this soldier. By God, we're going to have a hearing about this and find out who in the fuck was spending that money because the American people need to, I mean, give me a break. So they're trying to find things, and of course, the Republican solution is easy enough. Just go pass a bill that says, okay, that stuff's funded. But the Democrats won't sign it because they don't want any of that to get through because they're trying to make the federal government shutdown as painful as possible because it's extortion is what basically the government is engaging in. They're extorting you. You're just saying, well, you can't cut our budget because then we're going to take away everything that you like. Even the Astronomy Picture of the Day website at NASA, okay, they took the site down, right? It's not that they didn't update it with new pictures. They took the content down, which means you've spent effort. There are websites that have been up for, you know, a bajillion years. Space Jam. Do you remember that movie from, like, 1990, whenever the hell?
Michael Jordan and the Looney
Space
Tunes?
Michael Jordan. The Space Jam website is actually still up and running. And, you know, if you ever want to laugh, that is a good view of Web 1.0, what the web used to look like. But the Space Jam website is still up and running, for God's sakes, all right? So they had to go physically take this stupid thing down because they're trying to come up with pain points. And I know, as a voter and a taxpayer, when I went to Astronomy Picture of the Day and I saw it was down, I was like, damn that Ted Cruz and damn those Republicans. I called my congressman immediately and I said, if you don't get Astronomy Picture of the Day up immediately, why, by gar, I don't know what I'm going to do come Election Day. And we need to keep spending $1 trillion deficit every single year in order to keep my stupid, you know, picture of the universe up every day and change it every day so that I can feel that, you know, I've gained some knowledge. Really, this is what they've come up with. So I think the whole thing is blowing up in their face.
Well, you're telling me, though, you're telling me that they've spent money and effort taking websites down that they could have just left on some server running without having to do anything and spend any money. But they can't get the healthcare insurance websites to function after 3.5 years and $864 million.
Well,
this
apparently,
is government.
If they had a core competency, it seems to be roaming somewhere around getting websites not to work. I would say that is a core, you know, function of the government IT team, which would be the complete opposite of what you'd want to do, like, in the private sector. So, you know, we totally...
Yeah, that's the amazing thing. In the private sector, if you're running a 50% negative balance sheet, which is essentially what a trillion-plus dollar deficit is. Okay, you're spending $3.6 trillion. A trillion, some of it is over and above what you bring in revenue, which in government speak is, you know, confiscation of wealth from the private economy. And if you're running a 50% negative balance sheet, you would cut expenses. And if you had 25% of your labor force as non-essential, you would cut your payroll by 25%, and you would not have any non-essential activity. Something like 97% of the EPA was considered non-essential. Well, if 97% of any division of your company is non-essential, perhaps you should just shit can that entire division. And but in government, it works the opposite. If your division is non-essential, dysfunctional, and not providing any necessary services and not even operating within the constitutional enumerated powers, then you have to spend more money so that you can go to Congress and say, we need more money to do this. You know, now they're amping up the fear with, oh, they've got people at the SEC not working, so your stocks aren't safe. Your stocks are not safe because there's nobody at the SEC. Remember, these are the dumb fucks that were watching porn when Bernie Madoff was ripping off $50 billion. Okay, your stocks aren't safe because these idiots are telling you that they're going to default. And the crazy thing is that tomorrow is a holiday. There's no bond market. But I believe the stock market is open. So be careful what they say or what they don't say, because Wall Street can get kind of jittery and crash. And what it needs is a swift club upside the head. And speaking of clubs, here's a club. Hey, Chris. You're live.
I was just getting.
And Rex.
I was just getting blueberry sourdough pancakes when you turned me on there.
What are you having? You have breakfast at midnight?
We're Alaskans. You know, when it's dark all the time, who cares? Breakfast, lunch, dinner, you know? You know, you guys are hitting a lot of points. I'm on overload. I mean, you look at, I don't know if you guys saw the videos, finally some stuff is getting posted of the trucker situation and the veterans. And I just love that they took the barricades, and took them over to Barry's house, temporary house, and stacked them up in front of the White House. I just, come on. Yeah, I mean, it is priceless. And so much of this, and I think we kind of talked about this whole situation a lot as it's unfolded. But, you know, I listened to, by accident, I was searching for something else, and I listened to Rand Paul back in February on the sequester when Crawley, face the candy or whatever. But
she does State of the
candy,
Union.
Crawley.
Does she know that she's got a stripper's name? I mean, did her parents want her to be a stripper? Is that why they named her Candy?
Yeah, good luck on that one. But anyway, listening to her trying to pigeonhole Rand over the sequester, and Rand was basically laughing, going, this is a joke. It isn't even a cut. It's a cut in the growth. And watching them try to ramp that whole situation up. It's amazing. That was only a few short months ago. They're turned around. Go ahead.
Isn't Paul Ryan busily working behind the scenes in order to undo the sequester as part of his deal to reopen the government? He's going to make the Republican position even worse, and he's promising that not only will we reopen the government, which clearly, you know, has been shut down for several days, but we will do it and we'll fund it even more. The whole battle is over how much money are you going to spend in this thing that is just sucking the entire economy into it, and it's being made possible by an inflation machine that is destroying the wages and the middle class in this country.
Right.
And Paul Ryan's solution is, no, don't worry, we're totally going to keep doing that. In exchange, if you allow us to keep doing this completely self-destructive behavior, we will allow you to spend more money by getting rid of the sequester.
Well, you know,
Paul,
you know what the rhinos want. Yeah, you know what the rhinos want. They want that defense spending ramped up.
And let's
That's
qualify
what they
that.
Want.
Yeah, exactly.
Chris, qualify that. When we're talking about defense spending, you're not talking about military pay, military salaries, veterans benefits, military death benefits, or actual
war.
We're talking
about
sending money to Northrop Grumman and Raytheon and Boeing and all the other defense contracts.
Corporatism. And potentially Syria, in case you ever want to invade that. Because
that hasn't gone away
over there, which probably wasn't Assad.
Yeah.
Anyway.
That's just on delay right now, Tex. We're gonna get back to that. As soon as this debt ceiling debacle is over and they've spent us into oblivion, I'm sure we'll go back to trying to amp up the war. And I'm sure that Secretary Kerry will be out there beating the drumbeats of war, although I really hope he doesn't wear a purple kimono because he looks totally gay in that. And really, the Secretary of State should just not look that bad. He makes Hillary Clinton look like a real man. It's pretty fascinating stuff. But
I liked him when he was windsurfing. He looked like Ichabod Crane in spandex. It was really, my eyes were injured.
It's very sexy.
Now I'll never get that out of my mind. Thanks.
Since Chris jumped the gun and brought up State of the Union with Candy Crowley and Rand Paul, I was going to hit this in the second hour, but since we're on it, we'll go ahead and listen to like a 5-minute clip of Rand Paul on Candy Crowley talking about the debt ceiling, and she tries to finagle some blame onto him, and then she tries to sow a division between him and Cruz, and then she tries to see if he's going to jump ship and leave the Republican Party and run third party. Let me clear you in on a little something. There already is a third party within the Republican Party. The conservative movement has always been the third party within the Republican Party because the Republican Party is a bunch of status squishes who pretend to be conservative but aren't, and they killed their party last year in Tampa. And the only chance this thing has of being resuscitated is if they actually pay attention to the conservatives, and here's one of them right now.
Senator Paul, I know you said that you don't think the debt ceiling increase is that big of a deal, but the more you listen to people, the more you read to economists, read what economists have to say, do you think it's worth the risk not to raise the debt ceiling?
I think it's not a good idea to go through the debt ceiling deadline. I think we should go ahead and have an agreement in advance. That being said, though, I think it's also irresponsible for the president, who when he was a senator actually voted not to raise the debt ceiling. It's irresponsible for him to scare people. He should be the opposite. The leader of the country should be soothing the markets and saying, we will always pay the interest on our debt, and we do have plenty of revenue. We bring in $250 billion a month, and we have $20 billion in interest payment. There's absolutely no reason ever to default, and a good leader would be saying, we will never default.
Would a good senator be saying, we will never default?
Absolutely, and I'm trying to be that. We should never default. We should never miss a payment. But people have to realize that not raising the debt ceiling means you have to balance your budget. It doesn't mean you default. And people are conflating these two, and they're not the same thing.
So your best calculation, do you think there are enough Republicans in the Senate to join with Democrats to pass an increase in the debt ceiling? What if it came down to the wire and the only thing available was a clean debt ceiling increase? Nothing on it, just increase the debt ceiling.
You know, I think at this point, you know, we had a vote on Saturday, yesterday, and it was to just raise it without any restrictions. And we all voted solidly against raising it without limit and without restrictions. That's what the Democrats offered us yesterday. No limit over the next year, year and a half. We raise it as high as it goes. No limits. The American people don't want that. The vast majority of the people are afraid of what this huge growth in our deficit is going to do to us. And so, no, I think we have to restrain. And there are two problems, and they're both problems. It is a problem for the marketplace to see us go through a deadline. But in 2011, when we were downgraded because of the burden of how big our debt was, not because of getting close to a deadline. The S&P said we did not do enough to cut spending and not enough to act fiscally responsible. That's why we were downgraded. It can happen again if we don't wake up and do something to manage this debt.
I want to play you a little bit of a conversation that you had with Senator Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader on the Senate side, that was caught by cameras, and then ask you a question on the other side.
Oh, Candy, that was private. You wouldn't play a private conversation on TV, would you?
No, but I sure wouldn't talk when I had a mic on, so let me play this for you. Hang on.
I think if we keep saying we wanted to defund it, we fought for that, but now we're willing to compromise on this, I think they can't. We're going to win. I know we don't want to be here, but we're going to win this, I think.
You still think you're going to win this? And what does winning this look like?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about that conversation is I was on CNN about 3 minutes before that, and I said exactly the same thing on television. Not exactly in the same words, but pretty close. I've been saying all along, we don't want to be here. We don't want to be in a shutdown. Right. I was against shutting down, and it is a failure of conversation to be in a shutdown. And what I mean by winning this is not that I think it's a political battle, but that I think it is untenable for the president to say he won't negotiate. And he still repeated that. When we were in the White House the other day, he is talking to us, which I think is negotiation, but he's also saying, I will not pay for a raising of a debt ceiling. The American people just, I have to get this without any conditions, which is sort of him saying unconditional surrender, which is not negotiation. So really, in 2011, we added the sequester. That was a good thing. We need to add more controls and restraint to government spending, and this is precisely the time to do it. He's unlikely to negotiate when he doesn't have a deadline. Democrat saying, we used to want a clean CR, but we think you're squirming, so now we want to raise spending and break the budget caps. So I think we're seeing that the Senate Democrats are getting greedy about this whole thing.
Do you see yourself at any point in the future being anything other than politically a member of the Republican Party?
You mean you're implying a third party or some other party?
Or if you wanted to become a Democrat. There's lots of sort of parties out there. I just wonder if you see yourself being anything other than a Republican.
No, I've always been a Republican, and I'm one of those people who actually is a real lover of the history of the Republican Party from the days of abolition through the days of civil rights. Republican Party has a really rich history. In our state, I'm really proud of the fact that the ones who overturned Jim Crow in Kentucky were Republicans fighting against an entirely unified Democrat Party. So I am proud to be a Republican. Can't imagine being anything else.
And last question, you know this if you want. A lot of people have referred to Senator Ted Cruz as the de facto head of the Republican Party. Do you agree?
I think that he's done a good job drawing attention to Obamacare, and that Obamacare is something that is going to be damaging to people. And for that, I think he's done a great service in bringing attention to, I think, something that's really going to be bad for a lot of Americans.
But you don't necessarily see him as the de facto head of the Republican Party.
Well, you got 46 of us, and we all have a little bit of ego, so I think most of us kind of think, oh, we're one of the leaders. I don't think there is. You know, we have official leader. We have official leadership, but I don't think any of us are ready to say, oh, my fellow senator, he's my leader, and I follow him off the edge of the cliff. There is no one leader.
He has a way of handling snarky, liberal, so-called journalists, including those blonde bimbos and small-headed, big-shouldered douchebags on Fox News. Well, that was, by the way,
funny?
What was that?
Is that they seem to like him. There's something about his personality and the way he, you know, takes it, his little chuckle, you know, his
hokey
disarming
style. His hokey style disarms him, and then he hits him with facts, and he has a way of pivoting on the questions without really, you know, the typical politician pivot away and not answer the question. He pivots away from the bad question and actually answers the right question. By the way, that was the right Paul as opposed to the wrong Paul, as in that was Senator Rand Paul as opposed to the wrong Paul, which is Mini Mitt Romney Paul Ryan. We'll go to Tex and then Chris.
Yeah, well, I think one of the little sort of nod-wink things there is that Rand Paul went, as he said on CNN, and said essentially the same thing that he said in that whisper conversation with Mitch McConnell ahead of time. But what he said on CNN wasn't covered, and so they knew in order to get it covered, what the press wants is a scoop. Oh, look, we got a hot mic incident, and here's what the Republicans are saying. And what was being said was basically a positive message for the Republican Party, and it was played widely all over the press, and therefore the GOP got its message out outside of, you know, sort of the, what would you call it, the the point of view, I guess, of the regular media. So he's saying, oh, that was a private conversation. You wouldn't broadcast that, would you, right? Meaning he knew it was going to be broadcast ahead of time. It was probably pre-planned. But, of course, I'm cynical. But, yeah, so I think it was pre-planned ahead of time. But, no, I don't think Rand Paul is going to be leaving and creating a third party or anything. I do think that certain GOP members are certainly getting really upset about the way things are going, and they don't like all this cantankerousness, and they don't understand why, in God's name, we can't just go on spending money that we don't have, and why we won't do it at a faster rate than possible. And if they don't get their way, they are going to be very dangerous. This is, of course, Lindsey Graham, who's stating that he's very dangerous now because he's so upset about everything if he doesn't get his way in these negotiations. And apparently they went over to John Boehner's office and they told John Boehner, if you don't lose your spine and start going weak-kneed and wet-noodled in the spine like we expect you to, then we, the Senate Republicans, we're going to cut our own deal and screw you and sell you down the river, right? Of course, Boehner, at this point, really his speakership is at stake. So he's probably thinking, look, I don't care. Well, you guys go propose your own thing there, Lindsey Graham. But in reading Lindsey Graham's statement, it's not clear exactly what he's threatening, but he's just stating that he would, you know, sort of in general, vaguely become very dangerous. My guess would be what he's threatening is some sort of, I'm going to leave the Republican Party and become a Democrat, would be my thought.
I have it here. He's threatening to do the tango with John McCain on the Senate floor in a dress. That's why he's dangerous.
That would be dangerous. Nobody wants to see that. Let's see.
I was thinking of a one piece.
I had a quote, but I can't find it. Anyway. You know, look, all these people, they are freaking out over this. We cannot default on our debt. Look, as Rand Paul said, and I actually had not heard that quote before, what you had just played, but that's one of the key points, is look, whether you raise the debt ceiling or not has nothing to do with default. If anything, you're more likely to default if you keep taking on more debt that you can't afford, right? So an agreement to not take on more debt is the first step to not defaulting, right? That would be like going to your credit card company, you hit the limit, and you're a bajillion dollars in credit card debt, and they're like, hey, we think you're going to default, so we're going to stop lending you money. And you say, no, you can't, because I don't want to default. You need to extend that credit line forever. I need hundreds of thousands of more dollars of credit so that I can keep paying all this stuff, right? Well, that's not addressing the problem. That is exactly what the federal government is arguing. So by not raising the debt limit, it has nothing to do with whether or not you default. It has everything to do with whether or not you continue to borrow more money and therefore get yourself into a greater debt situation that you may not be able to pay off in the future, which is when you get into the default situation. So don't raise the debt limit, which realistically at this point I don't think they can do, but why don't you just keep doing short-term extensions so there's always a conversation about the debt and the amount of debt that you're going to saddle the American people with, because why is the U.S. government able to borrow this much money in the first place? Because they tell the people we're borrowing it from, which is the Fed, which is the banks, which are too big to fail. You know why they're too big to fail? Because they fund and they own the federal government. So they can't fail because then the government fails, right? So we got to bail out the banks or, quote, bail them out. So it's a vicious circle. So as they continue to borrow more money, they're dragging the economy down this death spiral. So what you have to do is stop raising the amount of money that you're loaning these people, continue to have a conversation about how much debt the country is going to take on and how much is going to be passed on to the American people. Because the reason they're able to borrow this much money is because under law, you're on the hook for it. And they go to the banks and they tell them, look, of course the American people are good for this money. They're like, I don't know, it's like another trillion. Are you sure you're good for it? Like, there's 17 of these out there. Are we sure you're good for another trillion? They're like, oh, yeah, we're totally good for another trillion. And how do we know? Well, because we can go seize the assets of every American if they don't pay the taxes to pay for this. That's what it is, because everything you own, your, quote, private property that you own, is in hock, because the federal government's putting it in hock by spending this amount of money. And the reason the banks give it is they'll go take everything that you have. So do you want to keep borrowing money and putting more of your assets up as the collateral on this loan or not.
How about your kids? Can you put your kids up as collateral or your grandkids?
Yeah, eventually they'll own stuff too, and that stuff's being put up for collateral as well.
Yeah. What I found fascinating, we'll go to Chris next, was that the scandal of Rand Paul's hot mic incident with Mitch McConnell. All Rand Paul was doing was coaching Minority Leader McConnell on how to tell the truth on TV, which is not really McConnell's strong suit. So, Chris, comment on Rand Paul, and then we'll try to move on to some more stuff.
Well, I think that Tex nailed it, you know, and I was totally impressed. That was one of the last clips we found. And once again, that level-headed, consistent behavior, you know, that I've seen since I started studying and following him is a breath of fresh air. I mean, I love them all, you know, as far as Cruz and Lee and Gohmert and the rest of them. But, you know, Rand has got this way, this calm in the storm, and he just seems to disarm people and then turn around and be able to, you know, like you said before, you know, take the stupid question, turn it into a real question and answer it. Because this whole thing, I mean, it made a very quick shift on us last week from Obamacare to the debt ceiling, and the world's going to default. And that was a manufactured strategy right across the board, because the real conversation, we all knew the debt ceiling issue was coming up. We all knew the budget's coming up. I mean, most of these departments are blowing through tens of millions or billions of dollars right now, because if they have any money left over, they got to blow it so that they can get the same money next year, you know, which is coming up, you know, in a fiscal year situation. And there's so many little facts that if you understand how government and economics and things like that work, and then you listen to these talking heads repeating this, you know, hostages, you know, with bombs strapped to their chest, you know, gun to my head, and all this crap. I mean, there's got to be a point. I mean, there are days I wake up and thinking, are Americans ever going to frickin' learn some basic communication strategies? Because the libs, they all get together and say the same shit over and over. They've been doing it since the 60s, since they realized.
Debt ceiling deniers. Debt ceiling deniers.
Oh, yeah. How many times did they say that?
That was the memo last week.
Well, that other video, the other video with Cruz on Crossfire, the guy said hostage. I haven't counted it, but I think it was 40 or 50 times.
Well, I got that clip.
You know, the lib that was on.
We can count it a little bit coming up, but yeah, you're right. They take those buzzwords and they run with them because that's the memo.
Buzz Lightyear, did you say?
What's that? That's the memo.
I was being facetious.
I got you.
Did you see the picture I posted?
Yeah, everywhere. But hostages. But here, Chris, you're right, and here's the thing. You're absolutely right that this was a predetermined strategy, and it was identified by smart Republican strategists, not CLEC strategists, you know, the consultant lobbyist establishment complex like Rove and all those other morons, but real strategists like Speaker Newt Gingrich. Back in January, he told the Republicans at a meeting, don't fight on the debt ceiling. You need to fight on the continuing resolutions and appropriations. And they were trying to use negotiations back then, which is the weakest of their tools, instead of using appropriations, which is the strongest tool the House has. And it took Ted Cruz to get the Speaker of the House, Johnny Boehner, to actually use appropriations instead of trying negotiations. Negotiations is what you get after you force someone's hand. And what Obama and Reid are trying to do right now is they're saying, give us all these things because of the emergency. Give us a funding of Obamacare. Give us a continuing resolution that fully funds government at post-sequester levels. And also let me borrow as much money as I want for you know, increasing the debt ceiling, and then I'll negotiate with you. Well, that's a bunch of crap. That's exactly what Dole did to Reagan back in the 80s, and Tip O'Neill. They said, you know, give us these spending increases, and we'll give you your tax cuts. Well, we got the spending, but we never got the tax cuts. And the same with the border. And you brought that up on Thursday's show.
Border.
You know. Yeah, they said if you give these illegals amnesty now, then we'll secure the border. Well, here we are 25 years later, border's not secure. So you got to get what you're supposed to get before you give away something, which is precisely why the Republicans can't cave and they shouldn't blink, and you need to tell them that. So So go to www.don'tfundit.com and sign it. There's about 2.1 million people signing it, which is somewhere in the tune of 90% more than people that have actually signed up for Obamacare. And call these bastards and tell them not to cave. 202-224-3121, I think. Yeah, 224-3121. Call them and tell them not to cave. And keep in mind, the whole debt ceiling, the whole default scare, the whole, you know, clean CR over and over again, hostages, debt deniers, all this stuff is supposed to distract you from what this is actually about. This is about, it was originally about repealing, and then it was about defunding, and now is a compromise solution, which is a relatively good short-term compromise solution. It's about delaying the rest of Obamacare for 1 year. Don't forget that.
Absolutely. Let's go Rex, look, in the course of all this discussion, in the course of the government shutdown, it comes out what the original plan was. So they always say, oh, trust me, we weren't going to fight this way. We think this is a losing battle. We had a different plan. You got to fight smart. You got to do it the smart way, right? So what was the original plan? It was not to fight over funding of the federal government or over the federal budget, but it was to fight over the debt ceiling limit, right? Which is the one thing that Wall Street hates and that everyone is going to cave on, right? Because they've already conflated debt ceiling limit increase with default. And so you cannot win a conversation in the press or the media with the American people if you're having a conversation about we're not going to fund Obamacare, and if we don't do that, we're going to default. This is what John Boehner and everyone came up with, because their whole plan from the get-go was to cave, was to fold like a cheap suit. They never wanted to have a fight over any of this. They didn't really want to have a fight. They wanted to have a token fight that they couldn't possibly win, because there's no way in hell Wall Street is going to allow them to have a conversation about not raising the debt ceiling or defaulting on the debt. And so they never were going to defund Obamacare. And so Ted Cruz and other people came up, and they decided to fight over the government budget itself, which the Republican leadership doesn't want to do. And they're still right now trying to conflate the two, to fight over the government budget with the fight over raising the debt ceiling. And the budget itself is the thing that causes you to need to borrow more money in the first place. And I already see this when you look at John Boehner's statements. He keeps saying things about, I'm not going to let us default, we need to reopen the government, blah, blah, blah. Well, reopening the government at full funding when it's at a deficit is the thing that's going to cause you to default, because you don't have money to fund this thing in the first place. So they're already trying to get back to the conversation they originally wanted to have, because it's their intention to cave on the issue in the first place, which goes back to what I've always said. These aren't really your leaders. The Republican Party is a captured interest. The people who are running it are on the other side. They're the party of Washington, and they just want to keep the money coming out the door. And they get paid to do it. That's who's funding their campaign. They've already screwed you and sold you down the river. You're just watching TV and believing all this bullshit that you see. So
what their battle plan was,
you should know. You should know where they stand and why you shouldn't trust them.
Well, that's precisely why what Ted Cruz
is. Or the Republican leadership. Anyway.
Yeah, exactly. But that's precisely why Ted Cruz is effective, because it's not about the Republican Party. He's going right to the people. Like I said, 2.1 million people signed his Don't Fund It petition. 2.1 million people. There's like 51,000 people signed up for Obamacare, and they're expecting like 7 billion people to sign up for this thing. Yet Ted Cruz got 2.1 million people to sign it. That's not enough, by the way, so you better get 10 people to sign it before this broadcast is over. And since we're on the topic and we're actually trying to, you know, we're going to talk about the debt. That's really what the show was about today, about the default lie. It's a hoax. It's a bunch of bullshit. It's not really that anything to be that scared of. And it's also inevitable. And it has nothing to do with raising or not raising the debt ceiling. Default is going to happen because the Federal Reserve is printing so much friggin' money that they're making it worthless. We're going to default by devaluing the dollar. We're not going to actually default by not raising the debt ceiling. So quit falling
Daniel
for that.
Daniel Patrick Moynihan called it monetizing the debt, and that's what we're doing.
That's exactly what we're doing. It's exactly
what we're
monetizing
the debt by not only watering down the debt, it's watering down the value of your income at the same time.
Mm-hmm. At a dramatic rate. But since we want to focus on what this fight is really about and where it started and why the Republicans are apoplectic about it, is because Ted Cruz made this fight about something very real. It was about Obamacare, which is a $2.2 trillion disaster that is going to cost jobs. It is going to cost your access and your relationship with your physician. It is going to destroy the private insurance market, except for those firms that love this crap because they're connected firms. And keep in mind that the Obamacare exchange prices that people are signing up for now are not guaranteed, and they're already higher than what people expected. Wait till you get the bill in January, and those insurance companies are loving it because they're charging you higher premiums, and they're forcing you to buy it from them. So basically, the government is making you buy products from corporations that they like, and if you don't buy it, they tax you. It's a win-win either way. And they keep telling you it's a choice. Yes, your choice is, on the one hand, I'm going to bash your fucking head in with a hammer, and on the other hand, I'm going to set your ass on fire. Which would you like? It doesn't make any sense. It's not a choice. But since we're on the topic, let's go ahead and listen to an Obamacare promotion, because this is the kind of stuff that you have to be aware of, how they're getting the message about Obamacare out.
I got this feeling about Obamacare, I'm quite concerned. He crashed my job into a bridge and watched my hours burn. He said some shit about lower costs in Medicare. None of the truth was ever there. Obamacare, I hate it. Obamacare.
It's disastrous. It's going to kill jobs.
Shit, shit. Oh, yes, now I've been told that it's a different way. Even the Democrats are trying to run away. They play the Ponzi scheme. They did the bait and switch. It's time to pull the plug. We've got to kill this bitch. I hate it.
Nothing in our plan requires you to change what you have.
Workers have their hours reduced and their incomes reduced.
We peel it.
The American people don't want this bill. It's a pig that needs to be shot and buried.
Even the president knows it.
Snitchshow.com.
I got this.
It's a train wreck.
That's a catchy tune. Obamacare.
It is.
I hate this. but you know what?
I like
the sad
that.
Thing
that
is
very good.
That it
that
might as
great,
well be. It might as well not be a parody. That's how messed up this thing is. Nobody wants it except people who somehow think that it's on the, you know, it's the step towards the single payer system that they dream about, which it is because it's designed to collapse. And then they'll call for a single-payer system because
yes.
They'll tell you the market failed. But the thing is that if you put this thing on top of an anemic economy, along with Bernanke's and soon-to-be Yellen's, and let's be clear about something. Yellen is more of a quantitative easing whore than Bernanke is. With the easing and the increase in the debt ceiling and borrowing more money and the fact that China just did a massive currency swap with Europe, I mean, the China and Europe are like the two second largest markets compared to the United States, and they're starting to do deals not denominated in U.S. dollars. What do you think that's about? And in the meantime, these idiots are playing theatrical, kabuki theater up there on the Hill, trying to hold the debt ceiling hostage to get negotiations done when it has nothing to do with default. And the fact is that all this is about Obama seeking to increase the power of the presidency, and the Republicans don't want to stop him from doing that because they expect to have it in 2016, and they don't want its power diminished. They want its power increased. Let's go to Tex and then Chris.
Yeah, well, the whole thing, there's a couple snags in the plan. It sounds really good, and I know a lot of people, right, who tend to be Democrats, not to blame them, but they haven't thought about this stuff because they don't have these conversations on their side. They mostly talk about how government can solve their problems, right? So they don't think about what underlies it, which is essentially the currency. And so they say, look, I understand the inflation and the currency and the pumping in dollars, and basically we're counterfeiting and all that kind of stuff. But as long as people believe it, then it can go on forever, right? So it's you and people like you who are pointing out the fallacy of this that are going to cause it to collapse. Like, it's my fault for recognizing that this is a scam. You know, that's like blaming the people who investigated Bernie Madoff, right, and say, oh, they should have investigated. It could have gone on forever, and everybody could have got 33% returns every year because it was never going to fail on its own. No, it's totally going to fail. You know how they enforce it at home? Very simple. We have legal tender laws. You flip over your bill, and it says this, you know, note is payable for all debts, public and private. It's a legal tender law. They have to accept it. So whatever the debt is within the borders of the United States and our territories, you have to accept that as our currency, which is why I often argue with people who run convenience stores who don't seem to know what the damn Susan B. Anthony dollar is. You have to accept this, dude. It is not a freaking quarter. It is a dollar, and if you're going to run a convenience store, you need to understand what the currency is. But anyway, Usually you can sell it to a person behind you who does know, but I usually don't do that because I want to fight with them about this. But anyway, the problem is, and the Romans had this, right? So under the Romans, they decided that, okay, we have a gold coin, right? But we want to inflate, and it's hard to inflate when we have gold, so I'm going to start shaving some gold off the side of these things, and eventually, before you know it, you're down to 95% gold and then 60% gold, and then basically you have a huge piece of lead that's called a gold coin. But they have legal tender laws, so you have to accept it as if it's gold, even though it's a piece of lead, or, like you with a penny, which is supposed to be copper, and it's not. However, when you get to the border...
It'd be worth something if it was.
Yeah, exactly.
It'd actually be worth something.
Yeah, but when you get to the border of the Roman Empire and you're a soldier, right, and there's no cities around you because you're just defending the freaking frontier and you got to buy something, who are you going to buy something from? Well, from the military town that sprung up to sell you goods and services, right, which are basically the same barbarians that you're fighting, right? So they're like, hey, look, I grew some barley and I know that you will pay me. I made some mead. Why don't you come drink my mead and give me money, right? And so you go in like, oh, my mead costs, you know, 3 silver pieces or whatever because it's so awesome. And you hand him 3 silver pieces that are made of, you know, lead. And he's like, yeah, I said silver pieces. Like, no, these are silver pieces in Rome. It's like, no, it's not, because I'm not under your legal tender law. I don't have to accept this as if it's silver. I accept this as its face value. And you're trying to pay me in lead or zinc or whatever the hell you've got, but it sure ain't silver, and I'm not selling you this, okay? So then the military gets upset, and they go march on Rome, and they have 100 years of civil war over this issue until Diocletian comes down and actually issues a gold coin, right? But this is the same problem that you're highlighting with what's going on internationally. In the United States, we have to accept this money as if it is a dollar, even though it's being devalued, which is what the fight over the budget is about. How much are we going to devalue this? Because it's flushing all of our incomes away. However, if you're in a foreign country, you can't enforce a legal tender law, because they're outside the system. And they're like, well, we're not accepting this crap. You know, so we're going to come together and we're going to do our own thing. Well, you can do that, except it's backed by the military, right? Which is, no, you're taking the dollar, we're invading your country. And so that happens from time to time. People try to get off the system. We go invade the country. But what makes our ability to invade the country is the fact that we have dollars. That's what Cicero said. The sinews of war are infinite money. That's what makes it possible. So foreign governments are like, let's get out of this system and we can sink this whole thing. We don't have to put up with this crap. If you actually ran an effective empire, you could probably keep this crap going and basically screw everybody. But we don't run an effective empire. We run a stupid empire that gets a bunch of people killed for no real reason. And we end up getting stuck with a bill. A bunch of people die. And the country goes into a complete basket case and we really have no control over it. So it's complete nonsense. So the first thing you need to do, fight over the budget. Keep control of that damn thing and quit devaluing the dollar. You have to return to sound money. That's the key to everything. Get back to sound money, and then all this other stuff you can talk about. But if you lose control of the currency, you're screwed. Even the founding fathers talked about that. But I don't think, I mean, really, people talk about oversights in the Constitution. I think if you, if you think about the conversations they had about the Constitution, they really were concerned about power and the exercise of power and how it balanced it against itself, but what they didn't really think about was control of the money. It's in there, but I don't think they ever conceived that a government would just be able to inflate the economy to oblivion. I mean, they did see that during the Revolutionary War, and I think they thought that they put effective controls in, but really, as we've seen, that is the key problem right now with the Constitution, is that there's no effective control of the currency. They shouldn't be able to delegate it over to a private company, which is what they're doing.
I don't know if they delegated it or if they abdicated it, because they don't have the authority to delegate the coining of money. And I'm pretty sure they were aware of how it happened, because let's face it, the Chinese had paper money, but they never really used it the way that it was used in the West. The first place to actually use inflationary paper money was Massachusetts. So I'm pretty sure that the colonials were quite well aware of how screwed up it is. And the reason Massachusetts did it, I don't know, they would dispatch their colonial militia into Canada on raiding parties. And then these guys would come back and they'd be like, pay us. And they were like, we don't have any money. So they would just print money and give it to them. And that's how paper money was invented. And then guess what? The Bank of England thought it was such a fucking great idea that they borrowed the idea from Massachusetts. Yeah, exactly.
That's what we're doing now in Afghanistan and Iraq with our emergency, spending bills to fund the war. hey, let's print up a bunch of money and pay these people. That's what's going on,
yeah.
Right? Same thing.
And now they're cutting their benefits.
Yeah, exactly. Now the military is sitting there, well, I don't know, can we legally pay these benefits? Who the hell, ask yourself this, who the hell in government is sitting there stating, well, I just don't think we can pay these benefits? Who is that person? Where do they work? What office are they in?
At this point, what difference does it make?
Who do they report to in the reporting chain? And they're the problem. Well, it makes a lot of difference if one of your relatives died and you're waiting on that death benefit, but yes. I understand.
I was paraphrasing Secretary Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, what difference does it really make? This is about defaulting on the debt. What? Anyway, but you know, a lot of people are fooled by this crap. People don't pay attention. They just turn on the news like, oh, Republicans are fighting over the budget. What a bunch of a-holes. They should just fund the government. That's making me poor
really
every day and robbing me of my income. And I wonder why I'm not getting ahead. I better keep voting Democratic because they seem to be giving me free stuff, apparently that's paid for out of my fucking paycheck, that's getting
smaller
relative to the cost of everything. Anyway, go ahead.
And the only thing that the Republicans are really fighting over is instead of going $1.2 trillion into the hole, we're going to go $1.1 trillion into the hole and tell you that you saved $100 billion. How exciting is that? You're still screwed. Chris, let's hear from you on this, and then we'll see if we can move on to something like the debt.
I don't know. You guys were all over the place there. I don't know where to start. It was awesome, though. You know, one of the whole debt thing we know is bull crap because the three of us know what's really going on. And plus, you know, the debt ceiling, what was it, May? And it hit in May, and they've been stealing government retirement funds, you know, to keep the government going anyway. Have you noticed that nobody said anything about that? And the only reason we know it is we follow people like Schiff or whoever, you know, guys who understand economics. And so that was a total lie. We hit the damn thing in May anyway. So there's one point. Point two, and this is something I think I heard Rand. I've read so much crap and watched so many vids that I'm losing my mind right now. But was talking about something I asked was, well, they're printing $85 billion a month and throwing it into the system anyway. You know, there's default is not there. Yeah, it's just a joke. It's an absolute game, and all you got to do is look across the board, including, frustratingly enough, Fox News. They're trying to keep the focus on this thing, and without really taking sides, so to speak. I've watched, you know, I can only handle so much of them, but you watch them, and they're it's like they want to help keep this battle because this is what sells, this fear-mongering bullcrap. And 99% of it is bullcrap. The issue is, I mean, nobody has asked the question, if we don't stop Obamacare and we add a $2.6 trillion to the economy and you know, and it always grows, you know what I'm saying? And it isn't working. It is. People aren't getting signed up. People don't want to get signed up. It's scaring the hell out of people. It's hurting the economy. That's the conversation. And that's what's going to really crush us, and we're worried about raising the debt ceiling. I mean,
it's a distraction.
The insanity of this conversation is mind-boggling some days.
Well, it's a distraction.
And
you're right. And on Fox News, they confuse conservatives by being fair and balanced, no-spin zone news, and all they do is distract you with the big-boob blondes with big hair and then spew basic rhino, you know, run-of-the-mill, squishy, you know, Republican, you know, talking points. That's exactly what they do. And they even – look, the only reason Fox News has any validity and the reason that people – if you look at the comments on some of the shows – yeah, some of the shows, people are just – the audience is railing against Fox News because these guys have Rand and Ted and Mike Lee and these guys on more often than the others, so people tune in. But then they realize that they're trying to spin it and attack these guys, and it's pretty amazing. And you would think that they would get attacked more on the other networks, but it seems somehow that Fox News is actually attacking these guys more than the other networks. And that crossfire, which we played a couple of clips on Thursday's show with Newt and the bald-headed communist and some Democratic wimp and Ted Cruz was pretty awesome. We've got a couple of clips we'll bring up.
Yeah.
Actually, you want to play one? You want to play one now?
Go for it.
All right. Here's Cruz on Crossfire talking about the debt.
So run, you cur. Run! Tell all the other curs alive, Thomas.
What?
You tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me. You hear? Coming with me.
That was Cruz putting the reporter in their place, but here he is talking to Newt.
I think regardless of what happens, we should pass the bill. No, of course it's not acceptable. We shouldn't have a shutdown, which means Harry Reid has to move off his absolutist position. His position, I mean, you've seen multiple compromises from the Republicans, and you've seen zero. I mean, can you tell me any movement the Democrats have had whatsoever?
But how does he move? What makes him move? What have you done to make him move, rather other than disrupt, your critics would say? Because as I outlined before, you've lost ground from even this summer on the position of getting people to vote with you. You lost ground from that position, and you haven't persuaded one Democrat. You got to have Democrats if you're going to overturn
this
thing.
Well, actually, just this week, Joe Manchin came out, Democrat from West Virginia, and said he supported a delay in the individual mandate. And listen, last time this was in the Senate, it was unfortunate. We had division among Senate Republicans. I had hoped Senate Republicans would be united. That didn't happen. But I'll tell you this, I'm optimistic. This next time around, this is an opportunity for Senate Republicans to come home.
I believe. You've raised money on this. You've taken to the floor for 21 hours. You haven't moved anything legislatively. Do you concede that point?
I don't remotely. And, David, I recognize that the Washington establishment hasn't been convinced by the arguments because the Washington establishment has been exempted from some of the harms. Members of Congress, how can you possibly justify to the American people that members of Congress are exempted from the law, aren't put on the exchanges like millions of Americans?
Well, they're part of the exchanges. They just get an employer contribution like
a lot of other Americans
people.
Don't. Millions of Americans
are stuck on... But 150 million Americans who get it from their employers do, don't they?
But anyone on the exchanges doesn't get the employer mandate, except for members of Congress. And President Obama did that. I mean, look, people are frustrated with Washington, and the simplest reason is, you've got politicians in both parties who aren't listening to the people and who are living by a different set of rules. The ruling class gets exempted. So Harry Reid and the Senate Democrats came to President Obama and said, we want out. We don't want under Obamacare. You know, I had an exchange with Dick Durbin on the floor of the Senate where he described.
My bad. That wasn't Crossfire. That was with Gregory. But point
did
made.
You hear him?
I'll
call
find
him David.
Yeah, I know. I'll find that Crossfire clip, but why don't we go to Tex and then Chris? And that's actually a pretty good clip to comment on because it shows how Cruz handles it deftly. So go ahead, and I'll see if I can find another clip.
Well, absolutely. I mean, Congress has to be held accountable, and they have to play by the same set of rules that they pass on everyone else because, you know, what he said there was about the ruling class, right? Okay, well, in America, we don't have a ruling class, so we're not supposed to, but all of a sudden we do. And how did that happen? Well, people stopped paying attention. So now you have a ruling class is playing by a different set of rules. And we shouldn't be allowing this. We should be holding them to the same set of standards. Now, you know, some people are trying to say, okay, well, we will get Congress to agree that they're going to go on the exchanges and, you know, that sort of thing. Well, the problem is Congress could agree to that as part of a deal, and then the next day they could change it, which is what they would like to do because they've already done this. So I wouldn't hold out for that. You know, that's too... you know, it's not solid enough, something to, you know, to compromise the way the government shutdown on. But, you know, look, as far as I'm concerned, keep the government shutdown going. I think the thing's going great. You know, some people are irritated. You know, Democrats are irritated. And just keep passing those one-up funding bills. Like, hey, we'll fund that. Hey, if that's a problem, we'll fund that, you know. And they're going to keep shutting it down and kick the debt ceiling question down the road. And you know what? If they don't agree to raise the debt ceiling, then that's their problem. They're the ones, you know, I think people are actually paying attention this time, and they're the ones who will ultimately be to blame for it. If you keep passing these laws and keep stating that you want to fund this, you want to fund that, you want to raise the debt ceiling, kick it down the road for 6 months, they're like, no, we won't compromise, we won't talk about anything, we won't talk about any of this. You know, as a friend of mine was saying, who's a big-time Democrat, he was like, you know, look, if I was Obama, I would say either I get 100% of what I want or you guys get nothing. And I was like, that's great for me. That's exactly what I wanted to say because the government shutdown is perfect, right? got 17% reduction in government expenditures, something like that. And, you know, if the debt ceiling doesn't go up, then you can't borrow any more money, which is part of what the problem is anyway. The part of the problem of the government spending is it leads you to borrow money. So I get 100% of what I want by Obama being, you know, supposedly recalcitrant. So I say just leave this thing going. You know, we haven't had a budget in God only knows how many years now. Just operate under a government shutdown for the next several years. Forget about it. Never open it back up again.
That's a great number.
It's not closed, really. Mm-hmm. It's not really even closed. It's open. So just leave it like it is. Perfect.
Well, a lot of this stuff is closed, you know, not closed, but big numbers, so like EPA and some of these other worthless organizations, you know, that basically hurt the marketplace anyway. But, you know, Rand has been very straight up about this. He's going, we're not cutting enough, and I want to see more. So, you know, I mean, it, when you say 17%, I'm thinking that's a good start, considering the fact that we're spending, what, a $1.2 trillion plus a year over what we take in to begin with. You know, right there is your cut.
Absolutely.
You know, what the hell are we spending money? What is different in our country today, right, today, at this point in time, than it was 4 years ago to justify almost $5 trillion more in expenditures from the government? We're not doing it. We're not building roads. We're not going to the moon. We're not doing it. We're not in a war. You know, we're putzing around in a couple places, but we're not in major wars. Well, I mean, think about it, $1.2 plus trillion dollars a year over what we take in. That's insanity, Tex. Why can't people articulate this stuff on the right? God.
I think that they're scared because they're in the pockets of the people who want this thing to go on. I mean, look, you know, from the standpoint of the government shutdown, they're spending money in order to make it look like it's shut down. Why doesn't Congress launch an investigation into that? Like, holy crap, how much money did it cost you to, quote, shut down basically the World War II Memorial, which is part of the National Mall, which is a field that you could just walk through? How much money did you spend on that? Go investigate that, right? Release that to the public. They're trying to push the pain on you so that their government, so that their budget isn't cut. Their budget, by the way, which is paid for by your taxpayer dollars, they took money out of your pocket in order to keep extorting you, keep paying them money that you don't need to pay them. Go make that argument. And look, the Republican Party needs to learn to accept yes for an answer. The government is shut down. You have a reduction in government spending already. And the government budget or the government debt ceiling hasn't been raised, right? So you wanted the reduction in government spending. You have that through the government shutdown. And the government can't borrow any more money, which is what you wanted anyway, which is why you're fighting over the government budget or the federal budget in the first place.
Right.
Basically, you've won. You've won in every level. Why are you negotiating with anything? You have your position. Our position is the federal government spends too much of our money. It's sucking our incomes away down this, you know, rat hole, and it's inflating away, you know, everybody's standard of living. So let's stop spending all this government money by reducing government spending, which you have through the government shutdown, and let's stop borrowing money, which you have through not raising the government debt ceiling. They're saying, oh, yeah, but you'll go into default. Well, not if you have the government shut down, right?
Well, you have
so
you have another
you leave it like this.
Well, and you have another thing that nobody wants to talk about. 60 Minutes just did a special on the waste and fraud over the disability money that's going out. And Sessions comes out every year with this waste abuse and fraud report. And we're dealing with, you know, like, I mean, if anything, the shutdown and everything that's still running shows you a 17% waste to begin with. But if you look at it, if you look at Sessions' report, it's more like 25-30%. Newt talked about this constantly in the in his primary run, and he had studied this for years after being, you know, in the government and then coming out of it in think tanks, and he ran the numbers on this forever. You know, everybody in this country knows that the government, anything that runs like the post office, you know what I'm saying? Medicaid fraud, Medicare fraud, you know, the post office can't seem to get its crap together. You know, we got UPS and FedEx, they're rocking and rolling, making money, employing people, moving ahead. You know, they can balance their frickin' budgets, but the post office has been around since the beginning, and they still can't balance their damn budget and run their business effectively. Everybody in this country knows that the government is inefficient, corrupt, and needs modernizing, as Newt has talked about multiple times. You know, the Lean Sigma, blah, 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 that he used to talk about. But when you look at this stuff, if there is ever a time for people to get together and say, we're going to fix the underlying core issues, the number one core issue, waste, abuse, and fraud. The problem with Ryan is he's going to come over, he's going to slide over here and go after his entitlement reform shit again while people are scared to death in this country. And that's going to make, that will make the Republicans look like idiots, you know, because it's an easy scare, you know, it's handing a scare tactic on a silver platter to the Democrats. Go after what everybody agrees on, waste, abuse, and fraud. There's 20% right there. There's that $1.2 trillion that we're blowing above what we're taking in. Let's just balance this thing. Don't start cutting this, cutting that. The problem is the Republicans want their big-ass war machine, and they want to go start a war. That's really, you know, that's one of the biggest problems right there.
Well, speaking of waste,
and that's a question.
Yeah, and speaking of waste, fraud, and abuse, one of the programs is the Federal Disability Insurance Program, right? Tom Coburn has been doing some research into this, and some randomly selected hundreds of disability files and searched them to look for fraud, and found that 25% of them should never have been approved, and another 20% were highly questionable, which means 45% of the program, or nearly half of the expenditures on it, under it, should never have been paid in the first place. And keep in mind, you're paying for this. This is what your government is doing with your money. This is why you pay taxes. They take money out of your pocketbook, and they send it up there, and then they have a program with near 50% abuse. And then the part that they don't have the money for, again, I know it sounds like a repeating record, but to get back to it, they inflate. They print and they deflate your income. They say, oh, yeah, but inflation's under control because the price of nickel and zinc and helium hasn't gone up, so everything must be okay. But meanwhile, the price of gasoline and food and everything you buy has gone through the roof. I don't buy a lot of freaking nickel and, you know, heavy metals and copper and all this other stuff, right? But I do buy gasoline.
You might want to change you might want to change your investment strategy.
Yeah, that's very true. But that is a lecture for another day. But, you know, your cost of living, the cost of going out with your friend, all this kind of stuff, it goes through the freaking roof. And then all of a sudden you have less money. Why? Because they've inflated your income away into oblivion. Meanwhile, their measure of inflation, oh, yeah, everything's okay because you know what? Crap that people actually buy and need, we don't put into our equation because that would make it look like inflation's really bad, and we won't have that story about how inflation's really good. So people think, oh, inflation's fine. I wonder why I'm broke all the time. It's probably because Republicans are up there trying to balance the federal budget and not give me more money.
Balance the budget.
You know,
that's funny. Republicans don't balance the budget. They just make it unbalanced slightly less than the Democrats. I mean, look, here's the important thing to understand, though. The CPI, which is the government's manipulated statistic of what your inflation is, okay, is merely measuring a distorted form kept intentionally low of price inflation. And why do they keep it low? Because the raises for their essential and apparently 25% non-essential federal employees are pegged to the CPI. Social Security cost of living adjustments are pegged to the CPI. So if they keep this kind of stuff low, then they can tell you, well, we gave you your cost of living adjustment because we're so generous, when in fact they just artificially kept it lower than what real inflation is. Inflation is the increase in the quantity of money. It is not the price increase. Inflation is the increase in the quantity of money. That's what inflation is. The price increase is the symptom of the creation of more money without a commensurate increase in wealth. And right now you're looking at a public debt that's approaching $17 trillion in an economy that generates maybe $16 trillion a year. This is not a good situation, and the Republicans aren't going to stop it. They're part of the same problem. Now, when I say the Republicans, I'm talking about the general trend of the shitty, dead Republican Party in the vein of George H.W. Voodoo Economics, Bush, Mitt Romney, John McCain, all those other losers, not the Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Mike Lee type of Republican. I actually was going to play a McCain clip, but let's go. Chris wanted to say something while I was rambling. Go ahead, Chris.
Well, two seconds, if I could jump in real quick, Chris.
Go ahead.
What Rex is saying is inflation is the increase in the supply of money, and if they're spending $85 billion a month, the Fed is in this bond-buying security plan. $85 billion a month is $1.02 trillion a year. So they're inflating the money supply by $1 trillion a year through their $85 billion a month bond-buying program. And so what is M1? M1 is, well, last time I checked, it was about $12 trillion, but, you know, I think it's now probably $13, $14 trillion, given what they have pumped into the economy. So if you're talking about a $1 trillion increase over that, you're looking at about 10% inflation, just because of the increase in the supply of money. Anyway, go ahead, Chris.
No, yeah, and we're not even pulling in what's going on internationally either. But I don't remember what I remembered and then I forgot again. Go ahead and do your thing, Rex.
Sorry. Well, when it comes to you, this is a short clip, two minutes and so. But this is precisely why people like John McCain are the real dangerous ones, because they shill for Obama, they shill for the Democrats, and they attack conservatives. This is what he did in 08 when he handed the election to this loser in the first place, and you ended up with a moronic Marxist community organizer with a Muslim Brotherhood foreign policy ruining your country for the last 5 years. And then, of course, his successor, the severely conservative Mitt Romney and mini-Mitt Paul Ryan, who apparently is still somehow considered the budget guru in the House. I mean, Wisconsin, for God's sake. I know that most of your liberals up there, but please, send us a real liberal. Quit sending us these fake liberal rhinos. I mean, you know, Paul Ryan read Atlas Shrugged and was so enamored with objectivism and rugged individualism that he decided to become a government lifer. I mean, give me a break. But here's John McCain explaining why the shutdown is not Harry Reid's fault. It's not Obama's fault. It's the wacko bird Republicans' fault, and he really spends more time and energy, just like he did, like Mitt Romney did in the last campaign, attacking the crap out of conservatives and treating Obama with kid gloves. McCain did the same damn thing in 08, and he's doing the same damn thing now. And you, Mr. and Mrs. Grassroots, listening to the show, you've got to get the show out there. And thank you all for sharing it. We appreciate it. If you don't share it, no one hears about it. We don't have any budget. It costs us money to do this. And all the shows that we have are available for you on Blog Talk Radio. Just go to Blog Talk Radio, find the Tex and Rex show, scroll down on the page. You click the link, and it'll play right in your browser or mobile device. And below the scrolling graphics on the show, there's a download this episode link. Just right-click on that. You get an MP3. You can send it as an email, burn a CD, take it to your Tea Party meetings, your Campaign for Liberty meetings, your Republican Party meetings, whatever. Get it out there. And don't think that because you're sharing the show, you're endorsing everything we say. But at least you're giving people a different perspective so that they can put this information together in a way that Fox News is never going to do, none of the mainstream media is, very few of the general places that run-of-the-mill rank-and-file Republican voters go to get their news. They don't hear this stuff, and they have to. They have to realize that Fox News is not their friend, and just because someone has an R after their name doesn't make them a conservative. And a perfect example of that is Jihad Jane McComed.
Talk to me about how you think this has been handled by the White House.
Well, I think it's been terribly handled by the White House. But let's have a little straight talk, Martha. They wouldn't have had the opportunity to handle it that way if we had not shut down the government on a fool's errand that we were not going to accomplish. The whole premise of shutting down the government was the repeal of Obamacare. I fought against Obamacare harder than any of the people who wanted to shut down the government. I campaigned all over this country in 2012 saying, elect Mitt Romney and we'll repeal and replace Obamacare. We weren't going to defund Obamacare, and so we shut down the government, and then that gave the opportunity for this to be terribly, awfully mismanaged and mishandled by the White House. If we hadn't shut down the government, this wouldn't have happened.
How do you feel about him representing you all there?
First of all, Martha, please, he's not representing us there. The Republican senators are going over to meet with the president, which I wish the president had asked us to come over a week ago. I think it's unconscionable that the president has not negotiated with us because he understands that he has the advantage. Look at the Wall Street Journal poll. Wall Street Journal is not a liberal organization. Look at the Wall Street Journal poll this morning. 24% of the American people approve of Republicans. That's an all-time low. We better wake up. defunding Obamacare is not achievable. So let's not delude our supporters by telling them that it is under the present circumstances, because elections have consequences.
Yeah. Well,
on the debt limit now, there are things that we could we could negotiate with the president about, some entitlement reforms, some tax reforms, things that are achievable. Defunding Obamacare is not one of them.
Well, we'll see, how the package gets put together.
I guarantee it. You know, not only will you see, I guarantee it.
All right.
What you've just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
He guarantees it. You know why he guarantees it? Because he and the other 27 members of the GOP surrender caucus in the Senate surrendered before the fight began. And then Ted Cruz and Mike Lee moved it, and so that they had to actually, you know, kind of get on point, but they all voted no. They voted on that cloture vote. They voted yes, which basically gave Harry Reid all the power, and then here we are in the stalemate, which they never wanted. They never wanted this because they've already decided they're going to lose this fight, and then they decided to conflate and move the argument over to the debt ceiling and this default crap when it's not about that. The House, despite its John Boehner, the House, because of the pressure you put on the House, Eric Cantona tried that little trick with the CR, and you caught on to it, and you called them, and you told them, and they had to move to the right, and they actually started acting conservative, has passed 14 clean CRs that Harry Reid has tabled. This is about Harry Reid covering for Obama by shutting down the government in order to not defund this crappy piece of legislation that is disastrous to the economy and isn't working. And these friggin' rhinos like McCain and Gramnesty and all these other losers, Bob Corker, I got a clip of him a little bit later up, coming up probably in overtime, these surrender caucus Republicans are the real problem. And you have to put pressure on them, put a lot of pressure on them. You know, he said elections have consequences. They sure as shit do, Johnny, and you're going to get dispatched by Arizona. You're never coming back to D.C., and hopefully we'll ship you out of the country while we're at it. You know, we got an open border. We just send you down south. Let the Mexicans deal with you. The simple fact is the real problem is not Reid and Obama. They're doing what they're supposed to do. Reid is supposed to be fighting with the Republicans to spend more money because that's what Democrats want, because that's how they buy votes. And Obama is doing what he's being told by his bosses. The bankers that descended on Washington, D.C., predominantly Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan Chase, they descended and told them, listen, you punk, we got all these interest swaps that are out there in the global economy. We're way over leveraged. We're worse than Lehman Brothers ever was. We're going to go down. We're not going to go down. And the reason we're not going to go down is because you little punk, are going to do what you're told, because we bought and paid for your elections both times, and you're going to do what you're told, and that is you're going to get these guys to raise the debt ceiling because you got to borrow a shitload more money to bail us out because we're over-leveraged and we screwed up. And that's what they always do. It's private profits for the bankers and socialized losses when they take too many damn risks, which means that all of you end up paying for it, and the stupid liberals keep falling for it every time, and you stupid conservatives think that the banks are some kind of private business so you protect them. So you got both people who should be fighting together, liberals and conservatives, against these banks are instead both covering for them. That's the ridiculousness of this, and that's what the John McCain just did. So let's go to Tex and then Chris.
Well, absolutely. I mean, and they cover for them because they also pay for their re-election campaigns, and so they don't know what else to do. Again, your elected officials are captured interest, and if somebody starts talking about something crazy like, hey, let's get rid of the IRS, and maybe we should balance the budget, we should return the sound money, then they paint him as some kind of kook, you know, from – you know, Victoria, Texas, or something like that. You know, he could never be elected. He'll never be elected. He could never get elected. What? Is what he's saying true? Nobody talks about, wow, he's really raising an important issue that we need to discuss. Like, no, he'll never be elected. Okay, what do you think about what he's saying? We know you don't think he'll get elected. What do you think about this argument, right? It's growing in the country. You know, more and more people are starting to understand and wake up to what's going on. But instead, they want to push that aside so that they can continue on business as usual. But I think, look, at this point, a lot of the stuff is like Wile E. Coyote has run off the cliff and doesn't realize that they've fallen off the cliff and that, you know, the crash is coming. Because people overseas are starting to see this stuff. And, you know, I keep talking to people about this, and I'm like, well, yeah, but, you know, if what you're saying is true, then people would stop buying our debt. Foreign governments would stop buying our debt, you know, but they continue to buy our debt. I'm like, China has said we're not buying any more of this crap. We don't want to deal with this stuff, right? And you know who buys our debt? This has already happened. The Fed buys it. So they go issue, like, you know, Uncle Sam comes up and is like, hey, you know how last year I needed that trillion? Well, this year I need like $1.2 trillion, you know, could you do me a solid and issue me that trillion? And they're like, of course, that's our main product. Could you pay our insane interest rates that we're charging for this? Like right now it's on a deal, right, because interest rates are really low, but don't worry, you're going to be paying this back over, you know, a lifetime here, and interest rates will go way back up, and we'll make a lot of money on this. We're going to help you out while you're shy. And so they go sell it, $1.2 trillion of debt or whatever it is that they need to borrow, and they sell about, what, $300, $400 billion to people who are interested investors or whatever, and the rest of it the Fed buys back for itself. So people already aren't buying it. We don't owe most of the debt to foreign governments. Mm-hmm. We owe it to the Fed. The Fed mm-hmm. owes it essentially to itself. So no one's buying it. It's a recursion machine. Do you understand? At what point does somebody not realize? I mean, how smart do you have to be to realize, like, that's crazy? It doesn't make sense. You can't continue a system like that. There is no such thing as a perpetual motion machine. And that's what they think the currency is doing.
Well, it's cycling around and around and around in the market. It's one thing, you know, for everybody to move it around the market once, because most of what's going on in economic activity in this country, especially in the, you know, when you look at the stock market and you look at, you know, the bond market and the rest of this crap, is they're just taking this printed money and they're just kind of cycling it around and around and around and around. We're not making anything.
They're increasing the velocity. That's what they do.
Oh, my God.
Increase the velocity
of
the money. And I think the faster it goes, it's like a shell game. If we keep going faster and faster and faster and faster, no one will realize. Well, the faster you start going, people start thinking, like, what in the hell is going on? Like, something is up here. And eventually the thing spins out of control.
Well, and we're farther – this is a bigger bubble than the damn housing bubble. And they did it in 5 years. The housing bubble, you know, it had decades under its belly, you know, going all the way back, you know, Freddie and Fannie.
Bubbles were designed to make the biggest bubble possible, the currency bubble. All these other bubbles, these are secondary effects of the main bubble, which is your currency.
Well, at least with the housing bubble, we had real property. We had property, buildings, jobs, you know what I mean, tools purchased, vehicles. You know, natural resources being produced. This cycle of printed monopoly money, digits, you know, I mean, if you study this stuff, and of course us three have, but, you know, the average person, if you sit down and really say, I'm going to understand, you know, the economic system, the Fed, what's going on, you know, in our currency, and what's going on with this QE thing? Because I remember when I tripped out, you know, back when we all first met, I tripped over that InfoWars interview that Jones was doing with that guy. And that's when I really started looking at what was QE3, what was going on, buying all the mortgage-backed securities, buying the bonds. And it was like, oh, my God, the Fed is just propping this whole economy up, you know, by printing money and lending money and printing money. And
they're not propping up the economy. They're floating asset values. And there's
right,
a difference.
Right.
And it's an important distinction for the audience to understand. I know that you got it, but
I'm
sure everybody else gets it.
Yeah. Go ahead.
What they're doing is they're propping up asset values by creating this currency bubble, which is why the Dow is somewhere in the 15 range. We'll see what happens tomorrow, you know, But the simple fact is it's really off by about 50% since 2007. So they're just propping up asset values by increasing the quantity of money. The problem is that in Keynesian theory, which is exactly what Bernanke and Yellen and all the other Fed morons do, okay, is that they think that by creating, you know, injecting money into the system, they create a velocity of money, which creates a money multiplier, and they confuse that with real wealth, okay? Now, in the short term, and for those who receive it first, it does kind of create a velocity. The problem is Bernanke has printed up a shitload of money, more money than just about every other Fed chairman combined has done in the 100 years that this monster has been ruining our economy, but there's no velocity. Companies are sitting on cash. Banks aren't lending. That thing is coming down hard, which is why they got to, quote, raise the debt limit, because they got to monetize more of the debt, because the only solution to the fact that there's no velocity because you printed too much money in Keynesian speak is print a shitload more money.
Yeah,
exactly.
And reduce
the counterfeiting.
Counterfeiting
is always beneficial for the counterfeiter because they get to spend the money first before anybody realizes that it's been counterfeited. That's why counterfeiting is illegal. That's why you get arrested for it. But if the government's
doing it by
printing more money, yeah, exactly. If the government's doing it itself, technically it's not counterfeiting because they're printing up the legal tender because it's backed by the force of law, but that's what they're doing. They're out of money, and they're just cranking out extra dollars. Like, oh, I need more dollars. I'm just going to crank it out. But essentially you're counterfeiting. And it's beneficial for the government. You know what? And when they start like, oh, crap, you know, now everything's more expensive, right? And we're not taking in any more money than we were before, so let's counterfeit even more, right? Because counterfeiting is a beneficial business model. It actually is something that works, so let's just keep doing it. But you have to keep counterfeiting more and more and more. It's like voter fraud, right? You know, oh, okay, we'll go stuff the ballot like 100 votes, we can win, right? Oh, crap, now people really hate us to stuff the ballot like 1,000 votes and we win. Now we need to stuff it with 10,000, 100,000. Now we need like 1,000,000 votes. Now we need 10 million. But you know what I'm saying?
Let's just hack the machine.
And so the size of the fraud has to grow in order to make the earlier frauds good, and that's what we're reaching. The velocity of money is increasing so much, eventually this thing's going to spin itself apart unless somebody steps in and does something. You're like, oh, yeah, but if you step in and you do something, then you're going to get blamed for the crash.
The thing is...
Oh, you're not blamed for the crash.
It's okay, and I think everybody worries about that, Tex, and I think a lot of people who actually understand this are also worried about actually stopping the Fed and going to a sound money system because there is going to be a crash and there is going to be a default. But the fact is you got two choices, as Newt Gingrich said.
How big is the crash going
to
be?
Yeah, either start doing the right things, as in conservative things, or manage the decline, right? That's what he said about the last election with Romney being the asshole who would manage the decline. The simple fact is a lot of people who are scared of this thing coming to a screeching halt are intending on managing the decline. Well, you know what would be better? Rip it off like a fucking Band-Aid. It'll hurt, but you'll recover faster and you'll be stronger for it. And that's the thing. But what they have done is they've created a massive Death Star. All right? It's a fully operational battle station that is going to tear this country apart. The only option is you go in there with an X-Wing, you drop a couple of torpedoes, you blow the fucking thing up, and you end the Fed. Until you end the Fed and abolish the IRS, people like John McCain and Lindsey Graham-nisty and Bob Loss's Cork Corker are going to be drawn like moths to a flame to the government because they can get all the perks and the freebies. And I can tell you something. I live in the Imperial City. We are suffering no recession here. The shutdown that has not affected us other than the fact that our roads, until the truckers descended on D.C. this weekend, were wide open. Okay? It hasn't affected us at all because every fucking defense contractor, lawyer, lobbyist, and other succubus that sucks on the government's teat. You think it's the welfare people who are actually poor people living in Appalachia and somewhere else in the country who are actually impoverished by the Federal Reserve and are now reliant on welfare because they don't have any other options because there's no jobs. That's not who's sucking up the system. It's the very wealthy people here who suck up the system through defense contracts, through IT contracts. I mean, a Canadian firm got the IT contract for these Obamacare exchanges, and they couldn't even put that together. It is absolutely disgusting. It is a Death Star, and the only thing you do with a fully operational battle station that's run by the Empire is you send in a Rebel Alliance to blow the fucking thing up.
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed.
It's absolutely true. I mean, you know, the thing has come unmoored from reality, and so this debate is actually bringing things back to reality.
Yeah.
But you have people on our side who are like, oh, no, we're going to get such negative press. We need to surrender immediately. Fortunately, look, so I was telling a friend of mine, you know, Democrat, already mentioned, you know, he's like, look, I'd give the Republicans 0% of what they want. I'm like, look, why would the quote Tea Partiers, which I don't even think they are Tea Partiers, because Tea Party itself has been infiltrated, and it's a captured brand run halfway by the Republican administration. Then you even have some Democrats who are in there claiming to be Tea Party, because Republicans will just follow the Tea Party banner no matter what it says, right? But what you know, what he was saying is, look, I give you guys 0% of what you want. Well, look, this thing has, I think, focused the Republican Party, drawn the line so you know who's on what side. You can see that the Republican leadership always intended to surrender at the beginning of this entire thing, and they never have any intention of doing anything about the debt. And continue to have this fight. You're winning on this issue.
Keep
Don't
the pressure
up. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
Look, they're gonna fold like lawn chairs unless we, and that means you out there listening, make it more dangerous for them with 2014 coming up. You make it more dangerous for them to piss you off than it is for them to piss off their backers. That's what you have to do. It worked with Boehner and Cantnut because the House was ready to trick you and fold like deck chairs on the Titanic. But
yeah,
instead, you
absolutely
called them up, you pressured them. Oh, Ted Cruz has all these people calling us horrible names like rhinos and squishes, and we're scared, so we're going to have to actually turn to the right because we don't want to lose elections. Do the same thing now again and again and again and hammer the crap out of the Senate. And the two most important people to call, okay? I mean, you should call Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Justin Amash and thank them, but the most important people to call are, quote, the leadership, okay? That is little Johnny Boehner. All right, 202-225-0600. Call him and tell him. Now, it doesn't matter what you actually say. The intern answering the phone doesn't really care about, you know, your opinion on the matter or your dissertation on why it's bad and quantitative easing and M1 and velocity. He doesn't care about any of that stuff. All he cares about is you tell him if they cave on the debt ceiling, you're not voting for him. That's all you got to tell them, right? Don't
Absolutely.
Delay Obamacare and don't cave on the debt ceiling. And then call Mitch McConnell and tell him the same. They'll tell his intern the same thing so they can tally up the numbers. 202-224-2541. That's Mitch McConnell. He's the minority leader of the Surrender Caucus in the Senate. Mitch McConnell, 202-224-2541. Back to you guys.
Excellent. Yeah, great, Rex. And so, sorry, there's like a major event here, and so I can see out the windows, and there's a big activity there that distracted me for a second. But look, yeah, so what the thing about the negotiations over this issue is, look, why should the Tea Party caucus or whatever they call it, the hardline conservatives or whatever the term that they're using, it doesn't even matter, right? The people actually give a shit about the actual problems of the country is what I call it, right? So why should they fight over this issue, right? They're going to lose. You know, I would give them 0% of what they want. Well, look at Obama's negotiating power. When he originally got this law, he turned everything over to Congress. He didn't actually negotiate anything. He's a terrible negotiator. Look at his negotiations over Syria, over Libya, over everything. He doesn't know what he's doing. And internationally, this is well known, that he's a terrible negotiator. He doesn't know what the stakes are. He doesn't know when he's won. He doesn't know when he's lost. He has no sort of sensory apparatus known to man. And so, of course, you would go to the wall against this guy. He's going to fold like a cheap suit. And Democrats are already upset with him over the sequester debate because they feel like Obama got spun around the axle on that one, and the Republicans got the upper hand. Not to worry, Paul Ryan to the rescue. He's busily working to use the Republican name to get Obama's chestnuts out of the fire on the sequester, right? But then, in this fight, you also have the Republican leadership, namely John Boehner, basically locked in the closet. He's going to lose his speakership if he gives anything on this. This was absolutely the best time to have the fight. You're negotiating against somebody who doesn't know how to negotiate, who's terrible at it, and you've got the leadership locked up in the House, right? Keep the fight going. You're winning. Plus, you're shutting down government spending and, you know, everything else that we talked about. So, look, this is a perfect time to have the debate and to have the fight. But the leadership didn't want to do it because their whole job is to give the Democrats everything that they want. Meanwhile, pretending that they protest against it. Oh, I voted against Obamacare 42 times and yet another vote that I already knew the outcome that we weren't going to do anything about it. But I'm going to go back to my constituents and hold this shiny object in front of them and say, I voted 42 times to defund Obamacare. Okay, well, if you voted 42 times, why is it still around? Why do you suck so bad? Why do I vote for you? What are you actually doing? Do you know how to legislate? Do you know how to get anything done? What is this horseshit John Boehner talks about where I'm only one half or one third of the whatever, and then, you know, you kick him in the balls and just shut the hell up, John Boehner. Like, that's not leadership. You need leaders who actually know how to get things done.
Did he really say that? Did he really say he was one half of one quarter of a bottle of scotch?
Yes, he was. He did say that.
Oh, my God, you guys are on a roll.
Hey, you know, I mean, look, sometimes you got to laugh or you'll cry because it's a disaster. What Texas said is absolutely true. Look, these, quote, Republican leadership are not your friends, people. Now, if you're listening to the show, you know that. The problem is that way too many, quote, conservative voters don't know this yet. They still just pull the lever for the R because it's not as bad as the D. That's like saying, you know what, I'd rather have, you know, a little cancer than a lot of cancer. Well, yes, a little cancer would probably be easier to treat, but it's still fucking cancer, okay? You don't want either. You don't want any of it. So the simple fact is you've got to uphold the real conservatives within the Republican Party. That's the real third party, okay? But you've got to put pressure on these others because the real conservatives don't have the numbers to get anything done. And what they don't want to be is merely obstructionists. Actually, Mike Lee talked about that at the Values Voter Summit. I had the clip, but we only got 15 minutes of live air left. We might get to it in overtime. But he talked about the fact that we can't just say no to everything. We have to be for something and tell people what we are for. And what
right.
we're for, okay, is actually putting the enumerated powers of government in their place and having them actually do the things they're supposed to do. They're supposed to defend the protect the border. They're supposed to defend us militarily, not by invading other countries for no damn reason other than to build oil pipelines for some Arab sheik or, you know, Israeli lobby. They're supposed to defend actual threats against the United States, okay? But they're not supposed – where in the Constitution does it say that they need to provide disability benefits? Where in the Constitution does it say that we should be barring ourselves into oblivion other than in a time of true emergency, which means that, you know, someone's about to invade us and we need to turn on the war machine to defend ourselves? Where in the Constitution does it say that you're supposed to put up barricades and a police line and pre-made signs and say, because of the government shutdown, we're going to deny World War II veterans who died – whose brothers died and who served their country and got injured in order to defend us from fascism, okay? Fascism, which is exactly what they brought to our shores. It's called corporatism now, but it's the same thing that the Nazis were doing. They brought it to our shores, and now they're denigrating the guys who defeated the Nazi Germany. That's the kind of insanity that happens when there's too much power and too much money, and corrupt pricks like McCain and Corker and these other guys are up there. So you've got to stop them. That's your job, and you have to wake up these other so-called conservatives and tell them, quit going with the R's just because they're R's, and quit falling, like Tex said, just because someone said they're Tea Party. You're like, oh, that's great, they're Tea Party. That means they're real conservatives. Well, ask them, what kind of Tea Party? Are you oolong? Are you green? Are you black? Do you take sugar with it? What kind of Tea Party are you talking about? Because Marco Rubio says he's Tea Party. He ain't Tea Party. Now, on the Obamacare thing, he's been talking fairly well and pretty conservative, and I'll take that, but he's a squish. He'll cave whenever the establishment offers him, you know, the vice presidential slot with little Jebby Bush, okay? And that's a fucking disaster because that just means Hillary Clinton is your next president. And remember, at this point, what difference does it make? Do you really want that bitch in charge? She'll be worse than Obama because the Republicans are helping Obama create an even larger and more powerful imperial presidency, and then they're going to hand it over to Hillary Clinton. That's the kind of insanity that we're talking about. It's an existential threat. And the only thing stopping it right now is a small rebel alliance, predominantly in the Senate. It's Ted Cruz, Mike Lee, and Rand Paul. And unless you become part of their rebel alliance and grow the numbers to such large amounts and put so much pressure on by calling them every single day, tweeting them, Facebooking them, getting other people to do it, they're going to cave. And if they cave, Obama's going to have the upper hand for the next 3.5 years. Reid's going to have the upper hand for the next 3.5 years, and I can tell you this, by the time the 2016 elections roll around, this might not be the United States of America. That's how serious it is.
Exactly.
Well, absolutely, and I just want to give a shout-out to the House, because in the Senate, I think a lot of senators are doing great things, who you've mentioned, but also they have the power of filibuster, which you don't really have in the House. So it's a lot more difficult to organize effective action. But I think the House has done very well in organizing that against John Boehner. So some respect to the congressman as well.
Yes. Some great guys over there that have taken a lot of crap for the last three or four, you know, couple, 3 years that are standing strong.
And, you know, look, when John Boehner came up for election as Speaker, the last time, and actually this was kind of something that's funny. What was it, 13 people voted against John Boehner as Speaker, and he only needed, what, 17 or
17.
Something to vote against him as
yep.
Speaker? Yeah, to throw it open. So he's four short. That scared the shit out of John Boehner, to be honest, right? And that's why he's kind of flying straight these days. So that was a great action that happened there. But if John Boehner doesn't, you know, go along with all of this and, you know, support the shutdown and try to do something about Obamacare, you know, his speakership is on the line. I think he knows it, which is why he's telling the line. But the Democrats have talked about this, and they've said, the Democrats in the House, that if there is a vote thrown open for the Speaker of the House, that the Democrats will vote for John Boehner to support him.
Wow.
And I think that would be awesome. I think that would be a great thing to have happen, because if John Boehner's speakership is thrown open to the whole House of Representatives and the Democrat votes put him over the top, I think that just pretty much shows whose side he's been on the whole freaking time. I think that would be great.
Right.
And that would probably be the end of his career as a congressman as well. But
that
would be wonderful.
Yeah, no, I'd be
kind of
very much in favor of that.
Yeah. That's the kind of clarity you want.
No doubt about it. And the fact is that, you know, the whole thing that you're talking about there, you know, with the House and all that, remember, Louis Gohmert, and I got a six-minute clip which will take us into overtime, of him really fighting against the establishment and the friggin' Fox host that's trying to derail him. Louis Gohmert nominated Newt Gingrich for Speaker of the House. Now, and no one took him up on that, but imagine that, because remember 95 and 96. We were more or less in the same place we are in. Yes, the order of magnitude, the numbers were a little smaller, okay? But we were in the same place, but with an actually competent and powerful president, and Newt put a stop to it, and then people like John Boehner rewarded Newt for doing that by getting rid of him. That's why you have to understand that the duopoly is the party of Washington, it's the war party, it's the establishment party, it's the bank-owned party. And every now and then, you, Mr. and Mrs. Voter out there, manage to sneak in a real conservative behind enemy lines, and the establishment goes apeshit, okay? You need to do more of that, and you need to destroy the establishment and their Death Star. This clip is going to take us into overtime. If you're listening live and you want to continue to listen, call in, and you can listen on your phone. The browser will cut you off at midnight. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. And we'll try to wrap up, but there's a lot to cover, and we really want to get this point across. But this is Louis Gohmert on Fox News, the allegedly conservative network, which is a bunch of horseshit. Listen to how the prostitute tries to derail him. And by derailing him, she's actually attacking Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Justin Amash, Mike Lee, and you. So pay attention.
Let's bring in now a key congressman in all of this, this budget battle here, Republican Louis Gohmert, joining us from Texas. Hello, Congressman.
Well, it's good to be with you, but I'm in D.C. right now.
Oh, you're in D.C. Well, of course you are.
Well, you're
on the line. Backdrop, but you're from Texas, letting everybody know.
Right.
Tell
me
this, Congressman. Let's start here. Do you care about the polls? Do you pay close attention to them?
Well, I care more about what the people in my district are thinking. And, you know, let me just say, we have made offers over and over again, and I really appreciate in the last half hour my friend Steve Moore pointing out that the House is supposed to have a role in this. And so Paul Gigot gave us a lecture on Constitution 101. Let me just explain. Negotiating,
right. You know,
101 is not making an offer, compromising, and having the President Harry Reid saying over and over, no.
I agree.
And he's watching the polls.
And let me jump
in. He's watching the polls, and that's why he finally was willing to talk. And now if we can get him to the next step of actually listening, we can get this thing negotiated.
I apologize. You're saying if the President, you're saying that he's watching the polls, which is why you feel like the President has now come to the table.
Of course. That's why.
Polls are not good for not everybody at this point, quite frankly. But I want to go back to you, because I think you started out, Congressman, by saying, listen, they have to. Everybody has a right to have a say in what's being put on the table. So when you tell your fellow conservative Republicans, don't cave, what does that mean? And how do you respond to some of your fellow Republicans who are saying, like, this infighting, it's hurting the party's brand?
Well, the party's brand was hurt with TARP. It was hurt with so many things, but especially 2.5 years ago when we made an offer to cut some of the massive overspending, and the President and Harry Reid said, nope, it's our way or the highway. We're hoping for a shutdown.
But you're not saying that either, Congressman?
Said.
I mean, come on, let's just have some honest talk right now.
Yes, some honest talk is exactly what we need. And if you will look, and the AP even, for heaven's sake, the AP, look at the dates. We have made offer after offer after offer after, and we have voted for compromise after compromise after compromise. And so what I would like to say to you and to Harry Reid and to the president, stop the dishonesty. Harry Reid saying that there's a bunch of firebrands in the and radicals in the House that are have hijacked the party, that's not the case. We are together, but the hijacking has been the U.S. Senate by left-wing radicals who want to keep spending grandchildren's money without any consequences.
All right, well, then let me jump in there, Congressman. I do apologize.
Sure.
I have to kind of keep the conversation moving. I understand your passion, but I want to pull up, because we're talking about the people now. I know you guys are fighting there, but we want to get the response of the people. Let me call up another poll. It's asking, do you approve of the way Congress is handling its job? I don't know if you can see this, but I know you know what this says. It's 83% saying they disapprove of what you're doing there. So let me continue here, Congressman. As you know, your colleagues have gone home for the week. No votes until Monday night. Will they get an earful from their constituents, or are they hearing a different chorus from the folks back home, or does it depend on where they're from?
Well, it depends in part on where they're from. If you're from New York or California, where you believe spending your grandchildren's money is somehow moral, then you may get encouragement to keep demanding more money. But most Americans are getting it. You're having unions now. One has voted to have a strike over Obamacare. It's the worst spending program in the history of the country. People are getting it. And let me tell you about polls. Listen, this is so important. The only poll that's important is the poll after we get to where we're going. And I'm telling you, if we cave and show complete disregard yet again for future generations,
and how would you
money
do that,
that we're spending, what we're doing now, we have got to reform Obamacare. Treat everybody equally. Treat everybody equally. Quit giving waivers and exemptions to your cronies. Give it to individuals. And then slow down the massive overspending, because history will judge us. And character is when you do the right thing, even when nobody's watching or when the polls are against you. That is what we need to have. Character and do the right thing,
and the
polls in the end will come out good.
Sure, and of course, again, I appreciate your passion, but I want to jump in with one final question.
It's
because
a passion
for honesty. Sure, and
we've been getting it.
Of course, we're not suggesting that anybody is without. Everybody has great suggestions. You know, we have to mix and match and
Tell me what the president has suggested. Tell me what the president has suggested. Tell me what Harry Reid has suggested. They have not made one good suggestion, not one, other than total capitulation.
That's why we're here where we are. Congressman.
That's right. They're not making any.
Any way out of this, sir?
Yes. Have them start compromising. We've compromised over and over. We got to the point where we said, okay, here's the deal. Here's our negotiators, conferees. That's what the law requires. Harry Reid would not even appoint conferees as the law requires. So, yes.
They asked for you guys to come back to the table with some clean suggestions. Sir, listen, my producer's in my ear, sir.
Yeah.
I would love to keep talking to you.
Clean is not clean. It's pretty nasty.
Liar.
It is, unfortunately, very nasty, and I think the people are, unfortunately, very, very tired of it. I did not cut the Congressman off.
Please look for the suggestions from the president.
Yeah.
They're not there.
All right. Thank you, Congressman Louie Gohmert.
Really appreciate it.
Just want to let everybody know I did not
clip
his mic or anything. As you can hear, he's still going.
Yeah. She enjoyed talking to him. That's why she got cut off.
Activist masquerading as a reporter. Holy shit. That was almost unlistenable.
She's sitting there trying to drive
the terms of the debate. I know you have a lot of passion, meaning I know you don't actually have an argument. You just have passion, so I'm going to negate everything that you say. I know you got a lot of passion, but the reality is, whatever this idiot is saying, that was just utterly painful. I think Gohmert did a good job there, but holy crap, what a heartbeat.
That's Fox News. That's your Fox News there, folks. You're supposed to be for the people.
And the antidote, Chris, to Fox News is get this show out there, people. You've got 90 seconds to call in if you want to listen to the little bit we're going into overtime, 646-649-1013. When you see our show out there, whether it's a pic or the Blog Talk link on Twitter, on Facebook, please share it. Please retweet it. It's the only way to get it out there. And please get this information into the hands of conservative and libertarian voters might be confused by the likes of Fox News or the so-called alternate media, which has also been infiltrated by the corporatists. You know, apply some critical thinking. Go to Chris's group, Coalition of Freedom. That's a great place to have some in-depth discussions. He organizes the posts by topic so that you can find things easily and relevant information about what's really going on. If you're truly conservative, if you're truly libertarian, remember there's a two-thirds overlap there, so learn to get along. You've got to work together to inform the uninformed voters. Low-informed voters are the reason we're in this mess. Now, low-informed voters are the wheelhouse of the Democrats. That's the only reason that party even exists. The socialist Democrats exist only because of low-informed voters who run on emotion.
More.
But the same problem is happening in the Republican Party because of low-informed voters who keep voting for neocons, statists, and bank-owned shills, thinking they're actually conservative because they speak conservative on the campaign stump. You got to learn to dissect this stuff. That's what we do here. Share the information. Get it out there. All right, back to talking about the Fox News prostitute. Go, Chris.
Well, I haven't watched much of Fox lately. They were doing okay there for a while on the Obamacare discussion, but when their upper management said, okay, it's time to beat these guys into submission because our controllers, the banks and the advertisers and the corporations, they need more money. So when the conversation switched to the debt ceiling, everything you would have thought that Obamacare didn't exist. And the people that are being attacked are people who are trying to stop this nightmare from being fully implemented. Because if it gets simple, while you're over here, look at this hand, look at this hand, look at this hand over this bull crap debt ceiling argument, on a government that's, we're printing and borrowing $85 billion a month, $1.2 trillion a year, and overspending $1.2 trillion a year over what we take in tax revenues. That's a whole nother discussion, but they got you looking over here on the right, and while you're over here on the right, Obamacare gets enacted. It gets enacted. We're never getting the damn thing out. The last time we pulled a law backwards was prohibition. And that is nothing compared to what Obamacare is in terms of embedded into our complete society. So
and the states did that. Keep in mind that prohibition was repealed by the states, not by Congress.
Yes.
That's a very important point, because that may be the only way to get rid of Obamacare if it comes online. But the issue is it will do so much damage until you get rid of it that it might not be recoverable.
Oh, it's already done.
Managed to make it illegal.
I would bet that we could take every aspect of what has not occurred in our recovery and tie it back to Obamacare somehow. Without reaching really hard.
Well, yeah, exactly. Remember, Chris, when they were talking about, Obama needs to focus on the economy, after he passed his government stimulus program, right? The stimulus program to get the economy jump-started, which is always what the freaking Democrat Party does, because it's a payoff to the people who supported them during the election.
That's all it was.
The way I'm going to stimulate the economy is I'm going to fix health care, right? I'm going to fix it real good. And I'm going to make it cost 10 times what it used to cost. And everyone's costs are going to go through the freaking roof. And everyone's going to get thrown onto these government exchanges, which, by the way, no one is signing up for. Right? That's the unwritten story. They're talking about, there was a glitch. And it was really hard to sign up, But everybody's rushing to the exchanges. Who in the hell do you know who's rushing to the exchange? I don't know a single person, not one freaking person out there on planet Earth, I know, is rushing to go sign up for Obamacare on the exchanges, period, end of story. It ain't happening, right? So that was how he was going to address and fix the economy. That's how he's going to get the economy back. So I'm going to fix health care, and then that'll address the economy. Big problem. It deep-sixed the economy, and basically it's put the entire U.S. economy on life support, so much so that even the Democrat Party's major constituencies are turning against the Democrat Party itself. But the media is out there shilling for this because left has always wanted socialized medicine, so they're just going to talk about how great it is. We just got to keep going. We got to keep going. And they're trying to control the narrative to make it about, oh, the Republican Party is disintegrating. Yes, it is disintegrating because part of it is actually supporting this, a.k.a. Mitt Romney. He created Obamacare, right? So he's the big creature behind this, him and freaking Paul Ryan. Oh, well, look, check it out. It's really strange. Republicans can't seem to get along. Some of them actually want to balance the federal budget. What's going on there? Now there's this big civil war in the Republican Party. Apparently they figured out there's rhinos in their party who are Democrats that we've been supporting for years. You know? But nothing's going on the Democrat side. That's not falling apart, you know? I mean, what was it, West Virginia? You know, 50% of people in West Virginia didn't go vote for a convict in a Texas prison over Barack Obama. You know? Yeah. People in Kentucky didn't vote 40% for somebody else other than Barack Obama. I mean, those are major fucking stories. I mean, are you kidding me?
13% less.
You have an incumbent president of the United States of one party, and you have states that are voting like 40% for a challenger. Remember when George Bush was running in 92 and all the media could talk about was how much support Pat Buchanan was getting? Oh, that's because it's damaging to the Republican Party, and we want to damage the Republican Party because they're our captured interest. Basically, they're the press's bitch. You know, their whole thing is, we own you. We own you, Republican Party, and we control the terms that you're allowed to debate in opposition to us. But when the Democrat Party is in complete disarray, and when it's a big, huge house of cards and it's all falling apart, we don't even talk about that, and we just talk about how there's a civil war going on your side. There's a civil war going on the Democrat side, too, and it all comes down to the fact that this country needs leadership, and it's looking for something to do to control the federal deficit and to control the out-of-control spending, and Washington reaching into everyone's lives, whether it's over defense issues or over domestic spying or over, you know, control of health care or whatever. I think everybody that you talk to thinks this government has overreached. And they're like, well, Mitt Romney lost the election, and so elections have consequences, so therefore Obama can do whatever the hell he wants. We don't elect tyrants in this country. No, we don't.
Yeah.
And Mitt Romney lost because he's that rarest of all creatures who is socially conservative and physically liberal. And there's a term for that. It's called election box poison. All right? That's never wins. All right?
That's Roe's plan. Roe's plan was to make money by losing. That's what he wanted,
exactly.
And he got it. He got it. And you mentioned West Virginia. Well, interestingly enough, the
senator kept his damn job on Fox.
Yeah, and he's going to still keep running his mouth. And don't forget about his conservative kill pack that's out there. But you mentioned West Virginia. Well, the senator from West Virginia, who I believe was their governor, may actually be more conservative than some of the squishy Republicans. But I think the point you made is absolutely true. Whenever there's fighting within the Republican Party, which there always has been fighting within the Republican Party because the Republican Party hates conservatives, and that's our only home, so we end up on the federal level at least. So we end up having a fight for our place, which is what happened with Barry Goldwater. It's what happened with Reagan. It's what happened with Gingrich. It's what happened with Ron Paul. It's what's happening with Cruz and Paul and Lee right now. So it's nothing new, but you're right. The press always looks at it and blows it out of proportion, and basically they look at the Republican Party, you got a pretty mouth, let me hear you squeal, you know. But speaking of West Virginia, here's Senator Joe Manchin with Bob Corker. Now, Bob Corker is allegedly a Republican, and he's allegedly a Southern conservative, but this is the son of a bitch that's been trying to derail Ted Cruz and Mike Lee, and Chris and I took apart that colloquy that Mike Lee and Ted Cruz and Bob Corker had. You can still find it on our page. It's in archives, and I made a little 79-minute vignette of just that part. But go to the Tex and Rex Show page on Facebook. Like that page. You'll get information about when we're broadcasting. And just scroll down to the picture of Bob Corker where it says, I don't think it says big F rhino, but it's big rhino or something like that. And listen to that colloquy, and we took it apart and shows you how these surrender caucus are trying to derail the real conservatives. But listen to what this guy Corker says about the Republican, quote, overreach, okay, which is just repeating what McCain said. That's the new meme. They're saying that trying to defund Obamacare was an overreach. Well, in proper negotiations, it's not an overreach. You aim high, and you're willing to settle for a little bit less. But these guys don't want to aim high. They want to aim low and hit their mark. And their mark is let's just get some concessions, like instead of having them spend $1.6 trillion more than we've got, we'll only let them spend $1.5 trillion more than we've got. That's a victory for these guys. Where on the other hand, the real conservatives were going for initially repeal, then defund, and now delay. Don't let them cave delay. Go ahead.
Let me jump in just on that thought before you go to the clip. Because, look, the thing about the Republican Party has always been that, oh, what we're going to talk about is all the problems with the exchanges. Oh, these websites don't work. What's going on? Oh, my God. Obamacare is a disaster. I can't even log in. Duh. You know, how could this work ever possible? It's just a technological glitch. It's easy to freaking fix, right? You get a bunch of IT knuckleheads. They sit down and they fix it, and all of a sudden they make it work. And it can work at capacity. It can work at scale, right? It's not that freaking hard to make the thing work. But their whole thing, and this goes back to the rationale behind the Mitt Romney candidacy, is not that we have a problem with any of this and we don't want to see it, but rather we can manage it better. And that, my friends, is today's Rhino Party. We are going to do the exact same things that the Democrats are doing, but we're better managers. That's their whole credential. Meanwhile, the American people don't want part of any of this. And they just say, oh, you're radical, you're crazy, you're radical. So this is the modern-day surrender Rhino Party. It's all about management. It's not about an ideological difference with them over what we're going to do or the direction that the government should take or how much money it should spend. It's always about we are better managers.
Yes,
Romney's
exactly.
Not going to appeal. Romney was never going
to appeal. The only solution to that disastrous problem, okay, is you got to feed the elephant one big-ass laxative and let it crap out all the rhinos. Because the rhinos are killing the elephant. Actually, they've already killed the elephant. And the only way you can shove a laxative down the trunk of an elephant is with a lot of pressure. And the only way you can get that pressure is you got to get massive numbers to call, tweet, Facebook, and just hammer the crap out of the rhinos and just flush them out of the elephant's ass. Because as long as there's rhinos in this elephant, it ain't going to stop the jackasses. And speaking of jackasses, here's Bob Corker.
A couple nights ago that looked like there maybe was a way to go forward. I think the Senate Democrats have pulled back at the request of the White House and now maybe trying to look at sort of busting the budget caps that were established back in 2011. So I think we're in a status quo. I do think we will see our way through this, but the last 24 hours have not been good.
Let me follow up with you on that. As we said, the president rejected the House GOP plan. Yesterday, Senator Harry Reid, the Senate Democratic leader, rejected a compromise plan by 12 senators, half Republican, half Democrats. It sounds like the other side is demanding, Senator Corker, that you reopen the government and you extend the debt limit with no strings attached. Will Senate Republicans accept that?
Well, again, are they going to try to change existing law, which is now where they are, or are they going to agree to leave the budget caps that have been long established as U.S. law? Are they going to leave those in place and set a framework that allows us to deal with the big issues our nation faces, which is mandatory spending?
Let me just quickly explain to folks. Because what happened was, as part of the Budget Control Act in 2011, sequester levels were set, and these were automatic spending cuts. Then the budget has to go, overall budget has to go down to a certain level. The Democrats are now insisting, let's raise the sequester levels, let's relax that. One of the questions that I know some Republicans are asking is, if Obamacare was the law of the land and couldn't be tinkered with, why is it that the sequester, which is just as much the law of the land, can be tinkered with?
So I agree. I think, you know, look, Republicans started off in a place that was an overreach. And to try to change the law that was central to the president's, you know, agenda was not something that was achievable. A delay, maybe. Other kinds of things, maybe. Now, I think the Democrats are on the verge of being one tick too cute as they see the House possibly in disarray. They now are overreaching. And I think that what we've got to do is get this back in the middle of the road, act like adults. Deal with these issues in an appropriate way. Joe and I were at a dinner last night. We're usually in our home states with finance ministers from around the world. This is something that is wreaking havoc around the world and will affect economic growth. And I do hope that over over the next week we'll reach a conclusion, and I think we will. But Chris, over the last 24 hours, there's not been good productivity on this issue.
Let me pick up with you, Senator Manchin, because you were part of this gang of 12 that tried to come up.
Not
with,
a gang. We have enough gangs up there. We don't need any more gangs.
It with an agreement, and Democratic leaders ended up saying that this gives too much to the Republicans, which raises the question: do Harry Reid, do President Obama, do they want a compromise or do they want surrender?
Well, I don't know what they want. They haven't detailed that enough for us. Leadership must lead, and basically we're in a crisis mode right now. We should not be here. There's no way it's acceptable for this government to be shut down. This is self-inflicted pain on millions of people. It's unnecessary. And now to go up to the brink of a government default, which is catastrophic to our country, to our economy, and to the people in this great country. How they can let that happen is beyond me. We have a group of 12 bipartisan. That's 12% of the Senate. A core, equally divided, 6 and 6, Democrats, Republicans. And we've got something that has a little bit for everybody. And a divided government, you can't have it all your way.
But forgive me, your leader, Harry Reid, said it was too generous to the Republicans, that it and rejected it. And is it?
Well, we're waiting to see the leadership come back with something then that's maybe he believes is more fair. I don't know. We looked at it from the standpoint they wanted to repeal the medical device tax.
That's what the Republicans.
Republicans wanted that. They compromised and gave us a delay for 2 years, which works. They wanted an oversight on as far as people who were signing up for it. The bottom line was is we don't want that to gut the bill, and it's not going to gut the bill. Give Obamacare a chance to work. If it doesn't work, it'll fall on its own. But no, don't have the underlying motive to just get rid of it. And the social issue, we're talking about finances of our country. I have a lot of a social issue. I can talk about an energy policy, coal, what role it plays in the economy of the government and the energy that we have. But that's not the place for it. And everybody wants to bring their social agenda to the table when we really should be fixing the finances of this country. And that's what Bob and I have been working on.
Senator.
Well, there you have it. That was.
I have two words. Two words.
No.
Bull crap. All of it. Every bit of it. All they want to do is the Republicans got their side over there and the sequester, even though they played that well, you know, the biggest chunk of that sequester was defense budget cuts. And those are big numbers for Republican donors. You know, these what Eisenhower warned us of. And they're all over the Republican Party. And then you got on their side, you've got all their programs and, you know, green this, green that, you know, they're move us to a world run country, you know, it's all tied to the world. So they've got their agenda, and that's all this is about. Both sides will cave. Well, the Democrats will always spend. Republicans will spend if it's beneficial.
The problem is the terms of the debate are if anybody wants to stop spending the American taxpayers' income into oblivion and wants to stop taking money from them and inflating their income away and the value of what they make, because we don't have sound money. We have inflationary ghost bullshit money, right? Then they're the enemy, because they're the enemy of government, and they're the enemy of government encroachment, and they're the enemy of the destruction of the middle class, which is all that Washington is seeking, because that's all the bankers are seeking, is to increase the debt. How do you increase debt? Destroy income. Make debt your income. You have to borrow to have money. That's the whole point, because who are you borrowing from? The bank. And so you need to become a slave to the bank, either through your government or personally, in order for them to enrich themselves, because their product is debt. And until you have so much debt that you're losing property, then they don't care. They need to get, it's like crack, you know, you just got to keep selling it until everyone's on it, and then everyone's in the thrall of the banks. And that's the thing. And if somebody comes up and says, hey, I think this is destructive for the economy, I don't think this is a sound way to run an economic system, I don't think this is what made the country great, what made us rise out of basically a continent that had been essentially undeveloped into, holy shit, you're the world's largest superpower on planet Earth, where the hell did you guys come from? Then you're the enemy. And that's what they're doing. They're turning people who are trying to restore sound money and make people's income actually meaningful, the enemy. And you know what? The sad thing is, a lot of the American people buy into it because they go to government schools that tell them that them being in debt is the answer, and more government debt is the solution, and government's the answer to all their problems. So it's an uphill battle, but who gives a shit, because we're right and they're wrong, and you keep fighting it. And you know what? Since most people are go-along, get-along types, doesn't really matter. You just keep fighting because you're right. You don't quit. Yeah. And it doesn't matter that they have the media, because it doesn't matter how big your media is. If what you're talking about is a fucking lie, it's still, at the end of the day, a lie. And as Mark Twain said, look, the truth is still tying up its shoelaces while a lie is running around the planet, okay? That's true. However, at a certain point, the lie gets discovered as a lie, and it doesn't matter how many times it runs around the planet. People like, that's a lie. And that's what's happening with this whole system. Go ahead. No, it's just reached the point that people don't believe it. Go ahead.
I was going to add something to this that people don't think about, and they sure don't talk about. But if these people run this thing far enough into the hole, then they're coming after that $6 trillion of personal investment that people have. Because you got to, and a lot of people go, oh, that's conspiratorial, but you've got, first of all, they've talked about
they've
it.
They've had hearings about it.
Yeah, it's a big chunk of money, and it's owned by the people. They've already stolen your Social Security money, which you paid into, Medicare, which you pay into. All that money's been stolen, and also when you look back what we were talking about earlier, the debt ceiling was reached in May. Well, then where in the hell they've been running the government off of? They've been stealing money. And Rex, you have other departments.
They've been stealing it from, guess what?
The G Fund.
From the G Fund. Yeah, from the G Fund of the CSP. So they've been stealing it from the government bureaucrats who are now furloughed, right? Like, oh, all these government bureaucrats.
That's their retirement,
so hard,
right?
They have mortgages, and they're not going to be able to pay for anything, right? The Congress is going to go appropriate freaking money for that. And guess what? They have a shit zillion hours of PTO anyway, paid time off, so it doesn't matter. They're just going to, to the extent necessary, they're going to use PTO to pay for themselves, so they're still going to get paid. It doesn't really matter. Because most
they're getting
of them
on unemployment.
Anyway. Yeah, exactly. They're going to get on unemployment. And then, yes, technically we've stolen from your retirement fund, but you're not retiring now. So we're still funding your retirement fund and blah, blah, blah. And nothing
so
changed. It's all a shell game. It's all bullshit. That's what, look, the key takeaway from my years in Washington, D.C., all right? So I had a very cynical boss, but it's also very enlightening. He's like, look, this is all bullshit. Every bit of it. It's like all these arguments, all these debates, they're not talking about anything real. It's all nonsense, right? It's designed to whip up people, to get them upset about blah, blah, this, that, and the other, and all this other kind of stuff, right? So at the end of the day, it's all bullshit, right? It's all bullshit. The federal workers are going to be paid. All they're trying to do is come up with reasons to make the American people give a shit that the, quote, government hasn't been funding, even though I know the department that I work for, they did a freaking audit, and when they audited the thing, it had enough money stored away on contracts to completely fund the entire department for 2.5 years over if it never got another fucking dime from the federal government. It didn't even need taxpayer money anymore. 2.5 years it could run on its own, right? And I imagine other federal bureaucracies are the same way, right? They're not, oh, my God, government's not working. We're not funding it. It's running out of money. It's not. It's not.
Scam.
You're just not paying into the damn thing.
Scam. It's a scam. The whole thing's a scam. That's the whole problem.
Scam.
Listen, we've gone way into overtime, so let's start wrapping this up. Why don't we go to Chris and then Tex, and then I'll wrap it up. And then once we finish, I will play a clip that's about 6.5 minutes towards the end of the show when we're off, we're done talking from Peter Schiff, because it's very important what he talks about, because Schiff happens. So go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, and he's a great guy for people who want to learn, who's a straight shooter, who predicted this crash, the last one, and he's already predicted, is working on refining his prediction on the next one that's coming. But So he's
even though he's Austrian, he'll talk to you in English.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, he's Austrian. Yeah, but you know, he's a good guy to learn from because he's very articulate, he's very simple, and he explains himself well. So he's a good, you know, he has good communication skills, and he's a guy to follow. You know, go to Mises, start reading, start learning. Go to Peter Schiff. Between those two and what we're talking about on these shows, it'll all start making sense sooner or later. You know, it's basic economics and politics, and that's the problem. And that's the problem with this, with a huge centralized government where everybody is feeding off the system. I saw this in my years in Alaska, you know, when that oil was flowing and they got that big, you know, oil revenue. They set up their constitution. I actually knew the guy who wrote the constitutional law that locked down that oil revenue so that those damn those crooked politicians couldn't change the percentages without a supermajority of money that they could access out of that oil revenue. So what would happen is oil would flow, it would sell, money would come in, and by law there was a percentage of that revenue, and you could forget oil, you know, just look at it in terms of tax dollars, but this is how you create a debt-free environment, and you can run everything off of it. They would take that revenue. A certain percentage had to be invested into the Alaska Permanent Fund, which was an investment fund. A certain percentage of, you know, so you had that initial fund. Then you had those new oil revenues that would come in, and there was a percentage that had to go back into the fund, a percentage that would go towards funding government, and then, you know, they had you people, you know, wonder about the checks we used to get, but, you know, we got revenues every year based on, you know, how well the oil industry did. But here's the bottom line. They locked that money up. And those politicians couldn't get at it unless they had like a 90% vote. And you were never going to get that from anybody. I don't remember what the number was. I just threw that out there. But it was a supermajority. So what happens is the revenues, and it would be the same thing as a government like our government, you bring in the revenues and you have it locked up to where that has to be invested. And then you deal with your budgets. And that's how every household should work. That's how every state should work, and that's how the federal government should work. Somewhere along the line, they have convinced us that you have to have all this frickin' debt, and you have to spend all this money, otherwise you don't have an economy. That the government has nothing to do with the economy, and yet this is where we spend all of our time and energy, all of our conversations, all of the pain that we're suffering right now, the last crash, almost every recession, if you'll take the time and go back and study every recession this country's ever had, you will find bankers involved and you'll find some new law that the government enacted, which means they did it for somebody. You know, some lobbyist got in there and they pushed some law through. It screwed up the economy and we had a recession. And also on the backside of every recession or depression, okay, you have a recovery. And if you study the recoveries, you will find out why every, absolutely 100% of everything they have done in this recovery is absolutely the thing you don't do if you truly want a recovery. That's where we're at right now. Four and a half, six years later, we're sitting here having, you know, looking at this monstrosity of a bill getting implemented, and we're at a point where it's bad enough and enough people recognize it that if they stayed focused, this thing could be shut down. This whole debt ceiling thing is a joke. I mean, it really is. I mean, it is the economy in bad shape? Yeah, it's been in bad shape for a long frickin' time. You know, and if you cannot run your household like this. My state couldn't run like this, even though they try to. That's why my state is so screwed up, expensive to live here. And the federal government can't run like this. This has got to change. And the only way it's going to change is if enough people are educated. You don't have to be a super-duper financial guy, but you need to start learning from these people, because if this doesn't turn around, they're going to come for your investment, your savings, your 401ks. Sooner or later, the BRICS nations, you know, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South America, and the rest of the countries that are starting to coalesce together and move away from the U.S. trade dollar, you know, all these oil finds all over the world or, you know, new production is going to change the price of oil and fuel and gas. That's going to change everything. It's no longer going to be just this powerhouse. I've got oil, you don't, so I can, you know, I can control the market. It's going to be a much more competitive market. There's so many things changing. All China has to do is not lend us money and dump about $1 trillion of our trade money that they're sitting on, and it folds us like a freaking paper airplane. And it is at a point, and nobody will talk about what's going on internationally, you know, with this once great empire and U.S. trade dollar and petrodollar that we used to be. Nobody even steps across our border. We affect the whole world, and the whole world is getting sick of us affecting them because we used to be a sane, sober, responsible country. 20, 30, 40 years of this insanity and buying votes by making people dependent on government is ruined our position in the world. And not you and me, but the people in that place where Rex lives, in the seventh circle of hell or eighth circle or whatever you call it. And this and all this stuff is coming to a head. And it's not going away. These other countries are sick to death of our politics, our bad politics, and our crooked politics affecting their economies. And several countries around the world have actually done pretty good through this whole economic crisis because it's predominantly in our industry and the EU, you know, in our world in the EU. And there's a lot of countries, you know, like Russia runs like an 8, 9, 10% debt to GDP. Wouldn't that be amazing if America was a 10% debt to GDP instead of 100? I mean, think of the conversations we'd be having right now instead of the conversations that we are having. Well, these countries are doing pretty good, and they're buying up a lot of gold. They're getting ready for something, whether it's a knee-jerk reaction to protect themselves or strategic, saying, you know, somebody's got to replace U.S. dollars as the foreign exchange dollar. And I would bet the Chinese, they're not stupid. I'd bet that they've been thinking about this for a long freaking time. I mean,
they're negotiating America's decline. They know we're falling out of the power.
They know exactly what they're doing.
They're like, these guys are overextended. This whole thing runs on this currency system, right? And they can see the tenets of it. And the problem is the Russians don't trust the Chinese, and the Chinese don't trust the Russians because the Russians think they're better than the Chinese, and the Chinese are like, your economy sucks, and we're better than you. You're a resource economy, and we're an actually developed economy, and the Russians don't see it that way. And India thinks there's someone, and Brazil thinks there's, and everybody thinks there's someone, and they're all afraid of each other because they all have a history of how they act, right? America is a new country, so America doesn't have a lot of history, but we're developing that kind of history.
It's building
right?
one.
And so they're like, okay, so what are we going to do after America goes? And China's like, I'm not being run by Russia. Russia's like, we're not being run by China. And basically, there's, you know, once you come, you know, après moi le déluge, right? So after the United States, the attempt at world government fails and everything gets atomized, you know, back into localities and that sort of thing, right? But it's happening. These discussions are going on, irrespective of what's being discussed in Washington. You know, that stupid Fox, you know, news reporter thinking that she's going to badger Gohmert into whatever, and I'm going to control the terms of debate because I'm a reporter, damn it. I have a degree in how to punctuate sentences, and fuck you, congressman, and your understanding of economics, you know? That person's an idiot. They actually think that they're helping, and what they're doing is they're destroying because you can control the United States and the people in it. And that's not necessarily a good thing, but the government can enforce its will on them against their will. And, you know, history is replete with examples of what happens when governments do that. But, you know, sometimes that doesn't happen. You can go for thousands of years and do that. But the rest of the world doesn't have to listen to our blithering bullshit. And they don't have to accept our counterfeit money either. They can do things.
Yep.
And the world has 6+ billion freaking people in it, and we're 300 million. And how long do you think you can keep running that freaking scam when you're running the scam on the people who are supposed to maintain the scam, namely the American people? You're scamming the U.S. people, the American people, stealing their income in order to pay for a phantom empire that does not benefit us at all. And that doesn't, the rest of the world doesn't feel like it really benefits them either, right? How long can you run this system? Who are the net beneficiaries? The people at the very, very top, right? Okay, well, there's not a lot of them, and they're too clever by half because you can't fool everybody all the time. It's all going to fall apart. You got to get back to sound money. You got to get back to a Republican form of government. You got to get back to constitutional government and constitutional strictures and the balancing of government power and individual freedom. Because, look, this whole thing about the movement to super states, right, to multi-state nations and multicultural states and all this kind of stuff where you got multiple countries inside states, which is what the Soviet Union was, the United States kind of was, and the European Union is trying to be, is breeding a counter-movement of disintegration of nations, right, which is Scotland is breaking free of the UK, you know, Slovakia doesn't want to be part of Czechoslovakia, and on down the line, right? People don't want to be part of super states because they create this massive power distance where the people who are in charge do not give a shit about the people they rule over, and that is not what the Enlightenment was about. And so these people have to contend with Enlightenment thought. And the reality is, look, we all need to get back to governments that represent us and that act in our interest and that do what we want to do. And the United States, notably, has gotten away from that, and most notably during the interwar years and the Cold War. And so a correction will come, and that will be restored or it will be lost forever. I mean, they used to have democratic forms of government, even though we're not a democracy, we're a republic, but a republic is a variant of democracy. And when democracy was lost in the ancient world, it was lost for 2,500 years. So it's not worth losing again. And also, here's a fear factor for you. The United States is the longest-running democracy in the history of mankind. Greece didn't last this long. Rome didn't last this long. Nobody lasted this long under a democratic form of government. So you're counting on your neighbors to stay informed, but they won't. And so you have to have these fights, you have to have these arguments, and you have to get people riled up about these types of things. Because otherwise it's going to go away, and it will go away for thousands of years, and it may never come back. Because
the
before
new
you had democracy, exactly, before you had democracy, you had tens of thousands of years of tyrannical rule. Because what
constant
government
war.
Is, yeah, when you
warfare.
What government is, when you boil it down, when we're all freaking cavemen running around in the Serengeti or
brute force.
I don't know, wherever the hell we were, it was like the guy who ran everything was the biggest, strongest dude who was around. And you had to go find a lion, and this dude beat the crap out of the lion. You're like, oh, I like this dude, right? And he's like, if you don't do what I say, I'll beat the crap out of you just like I did that lion, right? That's what it is. Government is force. It always has been force. Government is the military. And all this other crap that you put on it is subsidiary to that, to the basic function, which is protection. That's why people, like, I will give up my freedom. I won't go live out on the fucking open plain next to this field where I can farm and I can live with my wife and children and, you know, frolic in the sunshine and everything, because every now and then a wolf comes up and, like, eats one of my kids or something, or, you know, starts gnawing on my carotid artery or something like that. Like, I'm not digging that, you know. So maybe I need, like, a chief and I need a strong man, right? And I'll pay him some grain. Right, and that's what you do. It's like you pay protection money, and that's what government's all about, is paying the protection money. Don't lose sight of that, because government's force, and government likes power. And the next thing you know, this dude that you're paying, who was your neighbor, who just happened to have the biggest club or whatever it was that he had that made him the toughest guy on the block, next thing you know, he's building a freaking pyramid, he's got a harem, and you can't see him, and he can speak and never touch the ground because he's so freaking holy, and he's so divorced from you, and he doesn't care about you or your problems anymore. That's what government is, and that's what the United States government is in danger of becoming, the most powerful, consequential government on planet Earth right now. And they're so doped up
much
on
corruption.
Their power that you don't matter, and that's the problem. And the media that's supposed to be reporting on them and ratting them out is so doped up on how powerful they are. You go listen to that Gohmert interview again. The person interviewing him
thought she was more powerful than a congressman because she has a fucking degree in what? What's journalism? Is that a hard degree to get? How? You have to take over two classes to get a degree in journalism. How hard is this degree to get?
Gohmert's a judge.
Yeah, exactly. How hard was this woman's degree to get, right? And I'm not picking on her because she's a woman, but she happened to be in this case, right? And she's sitting there badgering this congressman. She's nobody. She doesn't know anything. Right?
That's right. The male chicks on Fox News are just as bad.
Yeah. She's just, it's another fetter of America. It's another fetter of America. Just handcuffs on the mind of the American people in order to get them to think that the government is governing in their interest, and that increasing government power is great, and the people who want to balance the budget are the enemy.
Yep. That's the meme, and that's what they've been selling, and people have been buying it. And people have been buying it. And look, it's a simple fact. What Tex just said is spot on. Government is force.
Yes.
Now, is government a bad force? No, government is just force. And, in fact, our government, you can consider, is a good government, which is why it's lasted as long as it has, despite the fact that it's limping and we're not enforcing the Constitution. But what you have to realize is the system of government that our founding fathers gave us, which is still the supreme law of the land, and it is up to you.
Even though they ignore it.
Yeah, it's up to you to enforce it. And the system is designed to protect the rights of the minority. That's how it's designed. And in some sense, that's ironic because the system, when it was designed, actually had legalized African slavery as a compromise of creating the Union. But the simple fact is that the method itself and the principles it was founded on transcended the prejudice of the founding fathers, and we managed to correct that problem. And so when people run around with it's the law of the land and the Supreme Court found it constitutional, so we can't change it. Well, if that's the case, we still have African slavery, so that's a bunch of bullshit. You can change the laws. That's the beauty of our system. We have a process by which to do that. But it protects the minority by giving the minority representatives the power. And therefore, you have this small faction. And when I say small faction, they're small in relation to the other 435 assholes and the other 100 assholes in the other chamber. But they're not a small faction in the relation of their relationship to the population of America, because America is overwhelmingly more conservative and more libertarian than it was when Barack Obama got elected. But this small minority of representatives can wield a lot of power, primarily because of the pressure that you're putting on the others to go with them, and also because the Constitution vests the power of revenue and appropriations in the House, which is the chamber or the part of government that has the most frequent elections for a specific reason. So the system is working the way that it should, and that's why we're seeing this fight, and it's an important fight, and it's a fight you cannot allow the Republicans to cave on. And I'm not saying that they won't raise the debt ceiling. They probably will, but they have to make sure that they get concessions of spending and cuts and delaying Obamacare with it. So as we approach the Columbus Day holiday, you have to keep in mind that Columbus was seeking to establish trade routes to the east, to China, because they had to bypass the Muslim-controlled Middle East because it was making trade very difficult for the Europeans. So the idea was to establish a sea route in order to have trade with the East, and also to establish a kind of a spearhead for what was at the time Christendom, in order to kind of box in the Muslim expansion. Remember, this was the year that Columbus sailed was the year that the 770-year Reconquista of Spain was ended. Isabella and Ferdinand finally evicted the Muslim infidel after 770 years of occupying Spain, and to this date, it is the only place Muslims have conquered that has been reconquered by the original inhabitants. Everywhere else that they've conquered, they still are there. Okay? That's what Columbus was setting out to do. And don't buy this bullshit that everybody thought he couldn't sail that far out because the earth was flat and they'd fall off the end of the earth. That's a bunch of horse shit. Because back then, 1492, everybody knew that the earth was not flat. We knew it was round. So all you idiots out there think that they thought that the earth was flat or crazy. What they were worried about was how long it would take to get there, because they only had enough food and water for 30 days. And their concern was that he wouldn't make it within 30 days. And the fact is, he didn't make it in 30 days. And in fact, on the 30th day, the sailors were going to commit mutiny against him. And he begged them to give him 3 more days. And he had mass said, and they all heard mass, and they gave him the 3 days. And on the third day, guess what they found? Yeah, they found the Bahamas. And that is precisely why we are here today, because if that hadn't happened, we're not likely to be here. Now, this was not the first discovery of America. Obviously, some Asians walked across land bridge of the Bering Sea, and the Vikings.
It was the only one that mattered.
And the Vikings also ended up here. But this was the only one that created a development and advancement in a civilization where we have this kind of representative government, economic growth, and benefit for everybody. It's yours to lose. Don't lose your inheritance. And don't fall for this lie about this so-called debt default. Okay, the default is going to occur because of the Federal Reserve, not because of not borrowing more money. Keep in mind that Barack Obama was against increasing the debt ceiling from $8.1 trillion to $8.9 trillion when the deficit was only $250 billion. Now he's all up in arms because the bankers have told him that he has to do this. And you have to keep in mind that we're not going to default on Thursday. Don't freak out about October 17th. We are not going to default because we have $250 billion in tax revenues every month, and the interest on the debt is only about $20 billion. So we got more than enough to cover that. The issue is, if you have maturities of your bonds and you need to reissue them, can you do that? Well, yes, certainly. There's a $17 trillion limit. So if you redeem some, you can issue more. There's no need to increase the amount of debt you have. You can just restructure and recycle
also,
the debt you've already got.
The interest is only $20 billion if you quit borrowing money. Otherwise, it keeps going up, right? So you should be good. So no one's defaulting.
Exactly. Yep. So that's the whole meme that they're feeding you. Don't fall for it, and you have to keep the pressure on because they're selling you this story in order to raise the debt ceiling. Now, they're going to raise it. That's fine, but they have to get something for it. You have to cut spending by an amount greater than the amount you're going to increase the borrowing by. Otherwise, you're actually now acting as a bad debtor, and your creditors are going to get a little pissed off with you. And if you want to avoid default, then what you do is you cut spending by an amount that's greater than the amount you increase your debt by. That's the only option you've got. That's what you have to force them into doing, and don't forget what this fight is really about. Force Harry Reid to reopen the government and not implement Obamacare on January 1st. Delay it a year. Obama has illegally delayed it for businesses and unions and the government and all this stuff. All we're saying is, delay it for the individual. The exchanges will still be open. If people love it so much, they can go sign up, but no one will be fined or taxed for not going there, and it'll at least allow us to get some sense into this system and really put in some real reforms that really work. That's what you have to do. So go to www.don'tfundit.com and call Congress, 202-224-3121. Make sure they hear you. Make sure they hear you every single day because they tally the calls up every day. They need to know every day that there were more people who wanted fiscal sanity than people that were looking for a handout. So you got to keep hammering them and quit listening to Fox News. I'm not saying don't watch it, but don't think that they're conservative. Understand what you're looking at. Look at what happened with the Gohmert interview. And that's not anecdotal. That's pretty much how it always goes on Fox News, and especially on CNN and MSLSD. So that's the important thing to take from this. And keep getting this show out there. Go to our Facebook page, the Texan Rec Show on Facebook. Like the page. You'll get notifications in your news feed. Go to Chris's group, Coalition of Freedom. And on Blog Talk Radio, go below the scrolling graphics of the show you're listening to in your browser or your mobile device and download the MP3 and email it out to people and burn CDs and hand them out to people so that they can get this information in a single block where maybe they don't have time to go looking at the three different news channels and pulling the different clips that are relevant. There's so much fluff on TV. We kind of pull it in here for you and give you some sound conservative analysis. It's not Republican analysis. It's not libertarian analysis. This is sound conservative analysis. And keep in mind, the third party on the national level is the conservative wing of the Republican Party, a party that died in Tampa last August. And the only way it's going to come back is if you invigorate people like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Mike Lee and Justin Amash. So keep fighting for liberty. Enjoy your Columbus Day. Don't freak out about the debt. And we'll be back next Sunday to bring you more relevant information as this unfolds. This is Texan Rex signing off.
The flame to liberty will never die.
Debt deniers are dead wrong.
Heard a lot from the debt limit deniers. The Republican default deniers.
These Republicans are debt deniers.
One of the most outspoken debt ceiling deniers.
Debt ceiling deniers.
Now we have all these default deniers.
They are not among the deniers.
Default deniers.
These debt ceiling deniers.
We hear from the debt limit deniers.
The default deniers.
They're not listening to the debt limit and default deniers.
These deniers, east is west, north is south, black is white, and right.
on the political theater in Washington, D.C., but as I said all along, it's just one big show. Right? Every time we have one of these debt ceiling debates, every time there's been a government shutdown, of course there hasn't been one recently, but nothing ever changes. They raise the expectations that there might be some kind of grand bargain, but there never is. And of course, they manufacture a crisis. And then the government saves us from the manufactured crisis, and everybody congratulates themselves for setting aside their own partisan gain and working for the American people. The script was written on this long before Americans sat down at their seats for the show. What it looks like is that the Republicans, as I predicted, are going to cave, pretty much fold, and give the president what he wants, which is a clean increase in the debt ceiling and a resolution that funds the government, including Obamacare. And it seems to me that that is what we're going to get. That's what I think the conciliatory statements that we got on Thursday from Boehner basically boils down to. And even though they're also bargaining about, well, maybe we'll just raise the debt limit for a few weeks, once you agree to do that, you've pretty much shown your hand. I mean, you don't want to give up your under no circumstances, which they never even had. I mean, what they were asking for wasn't even enough. But the minute they said they were willing to raise it temporarily, that's it. You have no more bargaining chips. You're pretty much caved in, and that is what is going to happen. But, you know, I think it's actually going to be worse. Not only do I think we're going to get an increase in the debt ceiling and a resumption of the government shutdown, I mean, a startup, although, you know, in many cases, we have more government during the shutdown than we did before the shutdown, which makes no sense to me, but hey, that's how a government works. But I think we're going to get not only an increase in the debt ceiling, not only more government, but I think they're going to go back and restore a lot of the cuts that we got from the sequester. As tiny as those cuts were, that was the only thing we gained out of the last deficit reduction, and I bet we're going to give it all back this time around. Of course, the media is going to portray this as a victory for the American public, because we averted the government shutdown. We averted default that was going to come if we didn't raise the debt ceiling. And that was never the crisis. You know, the stock market had this correction, which probably would have happened anyway if you just look at a chart. I don't think it was because of the debt ceiling debate or the shutdown. These two things were happening concurrent with one another. But the media and Wall Street managed to convince everybody that that was the only reason the market was going down, which, of course, puts more pressure on the Republicans to cave, because now their stance is being blamed for the market going down, which is why we've had this huge rally in the stock market over the last couple of days on news that this bomb has been defused, that this so-called crisis has been averted. And now, even though the stock market may be rallying based on the end of this crisis, that's not why it went down. But again, what the government is trying to do, especially with these high-profile things that the government decides to shut down, which are really just a way to inflict pain on American citizens by denying them some of the few things that we get from government, some of the few services, while, of course, we're still paying for all those services. They didn't shut down the taxes, just supposedly some of the benefits that our tax dollars are buying. But it's all designed to create this phony crisis of less government. Remember, this was all about more government. The so-called crisis was that we couldn't grow government as fast as we had been in the past. And so the government wants us to perceive that less government is a crisis, that if we can't go deeper into debt, that is the crisis. That's not the crisis. The crisis is the debt. The problem wasn't the debt ceiling, but the debt that the ceiling was supposed to contain. The only thing that stands between America and more debt is that ceiling. And that's why President Obama wants to raise the ceiling, because he wants more debt. When the government says it's about paying our bills, he is lying. It's not about paying bills. It's about not paying bills. We never pay our bills. That's why we're almost $17 trillion in debt. And what the president wants to do is raise the debt ceiling yet again so we can build that stack of unpaid bills even higher. And when the president says raising the debt ceiling isn't raising the debt, it just lets us pay for stuff. Again, it's a lie. We only pay for stuff in the sense that we put it on a credit card. We pay for it by increasing the debt. If we don't raise the debt ceiling, we can't increase the debt. We actually have to pay our bills. That was the crisis. If we didn't raise the debt ceiling, or if we don't raise the debt ceiling, then we've got to pay our bills. But because the bills are so enormous, we're going to have to be honest with the people who we've made promises to and selectively figure out who to pay and who not to pay. But because we don't want to make any of those hard choices, because we don't want to admit the obvious, we want to raise the debt ceiling so we can go on pretending that we pay our bills as we rack up more and more debt. Eventually, of course, the lenders in this transaction are going to wake up to reality. We've just threatened to default. Okay, we didn't do it, but we're going to. What did we tell the bondholders? We will default if we can't go deeper into debt, and we're not willing to prioritize interest payments on the debt. We're not necessarily going to cut Social Security. We're not going to cut government pensions. We're not going to cut military spending. We're certainly not going to raise taxes in order to pay our obligations. So as long as we have some extra money we can borrow, then we'll pay off our bonds. But the minute we get into tough times, we're going to default. So default's inevitable. The bondholders should know this. Just because we raise the debt ceiling and agree to go deeper into debt, that doesn't solve the problem.